Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. This is your host, as always, Adam Lowry. I have definitely been getting your emails based on my last video. Yeah, I put it out there like that. I'm going to let that offer stand out there on social media for a little while and see if he's willing to take me up. Any one of those gentlemen are willing to take me up. But I just spoke from the heart. I spoke from what I felt and what I feel. So I don't mean to offend anybody directly or attack your beliefs, but in a way, I just don't want you to be taken advantage of anymore and sold things. And I want you to believe in the power of you. And that's kind of what I'm angling on here, is too many people can become even addicted to optimization. You can become addicted to that motivation you need every morning. I mean, think about it. If every morning you got to wake up and you have to play an inspirational video or read some so-called inspiring meme just to get your day going, well, that too can be an addiction. And I'm just trying to urge people to look within inside themselves and use the power of themselves and not be attached to speakers that honestly aren't saying anything and are charging you bukus of money because I guess they made it, so we should do what they do or something. We live our own authentic lives, however that is for you and however you find your happiness. That's what I aim to help you reveal with my book and The Cognitive Rampage, which is not the way. It's not the source. What it is a framework put together from four or five different variations, from behavioral, from environmental, to cognitive, psychology, even biology, and pulls those together in sort of a cognitive rampage to say, look, here is a bunch of framework that you can follow along with and apply in your life and put your answers, your solutions into your life, because you know your truth, not me, not some steps or somebody else standing on a stage pumping you full of motivation that may deflate, that's not even researchable. And speaking of research and researchable, well, finally, the man Drew Peters has come onto the podcast, and I went straight to his name, and like I usually do, I let them introduce themselves, but I think he's too humble, so I'm going to see if I can be the hype ringman for this top formulator from Nebraska who loves what he does, has a passion for putting out good products, science behind it, which I think is important, not just good packaging and good salesmanship, but a man that stands behind research and science before profit, before commercial, before putting forward the business brand ahead of the customer. And I met him at Europa, actually, two weekends ago here in Orlando, and was doing an interview for ESPN, another show that I host, Fit Project Radio. And he gave me the best 10 minutes at that Europa show. And we aired that on the radio show on ESPN. We will be, May 29th, actually, on my birthday, he'll be on the ESPN show airing that interview. But after that interview, I had to bring him to the podcast where we are not held in to, no matter, watch your children's ears, what the fuck we say, when we can say whatever the hell we want to, when we can cognitive rampage as long as the fuck we want to, and we're not held between commercials or ESPN or 580 radio or whatever. There are no brand names here. Drew Peters represents himself, and he is not only a master of science from the well-known Nebraska Strength School Huskers. I'm a Hurricane fan, though, man, so it kind of hurts a little bit. But, you know, he is a certified strength and conditioning trainer, specialist, does editorials, does formulations. When you think of, you know, Breaking Bad, okay, this is the guy that you think about who's back there putting your scoop this and scoop that and mixing all this up. This is the guy. So all those powders that you're trusting, those brand names that you're trusting, and you may not know why, he's one of the guys that are coming up with new formulas, testing old ones. He's a freelancer. He does some work with some big brand names already that we will not mention here because that's not what this is about. This is about the real science. And that, my friend, may be one of the longest intros I ever did, Drew, man. Welcome to the show, brother.
Welcome. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, man. Today, yesterday, ESPN, you're all over my life for the last couple of days, dude.
Hell yeah, man. It's a good place to be out here. You got some good exposure. You got to chat with. I will soften the blow a little bit for you there. Technically, I'm from the University of Nebraska, Omaha. So we are the Mavericks. We're kind of like the bastard stepchild of the Huskers.
Oh, well, excuse me. Well, even on the interview, I screwed that up, dude. Thanks for not making me look like an idiot on ESPN, man.
It's all good. Nebraska Huskers, you know, the big school. If you pick University of Nebraska, Omaha, people would think the Huskers anyway, so it's all good.
That's exactly what I did, man. Shit. I appreciate it. You let me look smart and stay smart on my own radio show, man. You're such a class act, dude.
Well, hey, I got to be humble. You know, I'm hosting you today, right?
Yeah, you say you're humble, brother, but once you fucking jump in your realm and you're in your lane, shit, man, you're out there like Play-Doh, bro, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da, dropping stuff, man. It's crazy.
Never in Uzis. Click, clack.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start or even talk, man, but you're wrapping up your week, you know, doing what you're doing. You know what? This is how I love to open the podcast, man. When I catch myself crossing over but into the bullshit guy, I fucking caught myself right there, dude. I started talking and I started turning this radio voice, dude, and I was like, where's this fucking guy going? Not you, myself, right? Man, you got to reel me back in, man, because we just did the damn radio show yesterday, you and I.
Yeah, and it was crisp. It was good. It was great content. I'm excited people to hear it.
Well, because you did all the talking.
Yeah, to some extent. But hey, you know, I can only, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make a drink. You know, I'm kind of the horse. I have to find the fountain. You led me there.
Yeah, I like that, man. I like that, man. I use a metaphor when I'm doing group therapy for substance abuse or something like that. One of the things I like to do is say, look, man, I used to talk about the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. The more research I'm now doing with Dr. Bobby Hoffman, there may be no such thing as intrinsic motivation. But when I used to make the correlation, just for a metaphor, I'd say, look, we can give you all the tools, all the help, all the things that you need, like a horse, right? We can lead you to water, but I can't make you drink. And trust me, there are millions laying dead along the water's edge.
Yeah, absolutely. And the funny you mentioned extrinsic motivation brings back old grad school. We had multiple classes, even in exercise physiology, kinesiology, working on my master's, you know, we cover a huge part of that in motivation, physical activity, cognitive behavior as a result of, well, exercise influences that, you know, like literally they say exercise is the best drug. I kid you not. That was actually on the X-Sci Club t-shirts. You know, I'm an old man and, you know, the old age of 23 back then in grad school. So I wasn't having none of their shirts, but we had this old doctor, Dr. Berg. That's what he stood by. Exercise, the best drug. And the guy was like 60 years old. He had like a gold chain and he was a complete boss.
Yeah. I mean, it can really put you on different levels. And I can hear a bunch of psychedelic people going, no, sir. I haven't met a supplement or a deadlift that took me to level 4 of sacred geometry.
Well, clearly they ain't lifting heavy enough.
I love it, man. That was quick. Yeah, yeah. You know what it could be? You know, I've heard some people that are deeply involved in meditation, able to reach some certain levels like that, or able to, you know, have out of body experiences, etc. I've heard some people. I mean, I personally have never been close on a meditation level, but I mean, do you meditate?
For a big lift, you know, my meditation consists more of like along the lines of Slipknot, a bunch of stimulants, and trying to rip something in half. You know, but that's my meditation. In all seriousness, no, I mean, sometimes you can only get amped up so much, you know, they find one thing intrinsically, you know, you're talking about the psychological things of that. As you mature in your training age, it's kind of funny, you know, some well-known bodybuilders, older gentlemen, they don't listen to heavy music, listen to like classical Mozart, the lifting, the arts of lifting. I'm not at that level yet in terms of not chilling out that much, I'd probably fall asleep.
You heard what I was playing just before you came on, right?
Yeah, because you know, some guys will lift to that. I'm like, you know what, that ain't me, I need something a little more, you know, up-tempo, but, you know, I can only...
Still mad at some things.
Yeah, yeah, you know, get a little pissed off at the world. I mean, there are certain times, it's amazing, I know you, like, you can relate to this, too. There's certain times exercise and having, you know, music influences your life, you know, things of, like, for exercise, getting amped up, that's a good thing. In terms of listening to Hollywood Undead Radio on your motor, on your fucking super sport bike, and you're zipping on the interstate in traffic, that's not a good thing. I mean, you know, you get too amped up, you start cutting off cars, and all right, what's up?
Yeah, I switch a few times. I go through phases when I'm working out. I've yet to be the guy to work out or lift to classical. I'm not that, I thank God, I guess I'm not that old yet. So I will start a podcast and play some Bach, as you saw before I load up the podcast. Maybe it's the symmetry of the music that you begin to appreciate as you get older, because the chaos seems to be infinitely forever. And so if maybe that classical sometimes gives you that moment to where this is perfectly in line with, you know, what you expect. But man, not every once in a while, actually. Yeah, it's either going to be some hip hop or I'm definitely coming in with some Godsmack, Metallica, that kind of stuff for sure.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to come and amped up the interview and have your brain in 10 different places. You know, it's the same with stimulants. Like, how many cups of coffee I had today? Let's redial this in about 4 o'clock after I've toned down a bit.
Hey, man. I'm drinking my own stimulant coffee here. All right.
Well, it's all right. I mean, you're just getting your day started. I'm sure you got up at, you know, probably 2 today.
No, sir. I was up at 5:30 today.
Oh, on the contrary, I was not. So therefore, good job.
I was up at 4:30, had a wonderful meeting at 9 by a guy named Darian, who I really hope is going to take over all the marketing and social media for all of Cognitive Rampage and like 3 other projects that we're doing. So I had him, then a crosstown meeting, 2 interviews, and this guy, Drew, that I've yet to really start to interview yet on the podcast, man. So let me ask you, man, walk me back to the little Vanilla Gorilla. Walk me back to that hometown. Tell me where you come from. What was it like, man? I mean, was it bigger, stronger, faster type? You know, was it wrestling there? What was it? Was it sports? Take me home, man.
Well, I'm originally from a small town in Nebraska. Well, imagine that. It's not all small towns, so, you know, I see your smart ass over there laughing at me. In the biggest city's Omaha, it's spelled, you know.
Hey, man, I'm from a place called Ocoee.
Ocoee?
I mean, come on. Right. See, you can't even pronounce it. I was born in Pine Hills, but I was actually raised halfway more in Ocoee. So I'm with you on the whole small town, country town. You know what I mean?
I got you. I mean, at least my hometown doesn't sound like some sushi. But originally, I'm from DeWitt, Nebraska. Interestingly, if you've heard of the Vice Grip Lock.
All of a sudden, dude. Fucking formulator, scientist, comedian, mass bodybuilder, strength guy on the side. Good Lord, man.
Hey, man, you gotta pay the bills. You know what's up with that? But like I say, you know, it's a little small town known out of all things in the world renowned Vice Grip Locking Pliers. That's what was made in my hometown. It takes up, I believe, 8 city blocks. You know, long ago, they sold the Rubbermaid about 10 years ago, so it's long gone. That's what the town's known for. Small town, about 600-700 people, and a little Vanilla Gorilla in, of course, high school back in the day. It's one of those Class C in Nebraska high schools. I'm not sure what equivalent that would be in Florida, but, for example, my graduating class had 40 people in it.
Wait, what?
Yeah, 40 people.
My graduating class had 996, and that's because they like suspended like a few of my friends at the end. So, I mean, wow, my class size was like 45. Like, I mean, my every 6th period was 45 kids.
Exactly. So you think you have a small town? I'm from like a small town. My town had less people in the graduating class.
So, okay, you win, man. I'm sorry.
It's all good. You know, we're out in the cornfields. You know, apparently we have dirt. We just got outhouses last week. So a big technological advancement in Nebraska. Running water, that's coming next month. But regardless, it's one of those places. You grow up and you play all the sports typically. You know, you play in football in the fall. I wrestled in the wintertime. We were a big wrestling school. Track in the spring, our school was a Tri-County High School. It was a stacked in track. My name's on 3 state championship trophies. We're just good at track. I didn't do anything. I just shot and disc and kind of slept because I got done with wrestling this season.
I was going to say, I was that guy too, where we just threw things kind of far, but not very far. But we were, you know what though, man? I did run the mile in high school and one time, and it was funny because I was a linebacker and you would line up and the little guy would be like, "Are you kidding me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'll be right with you too, buddy," for a little while.
Oh, I hear you. The thing is, my senior year, I played baseball too. I actually had a broken bone in my wrist. My senior year of wrestling, I broke a bone, and I didn't go to the doctor until like 2.5 months later after state wrestling. You know, you're 34 and 10. You're not going to fuck that up. And get the track season, didn't heal, had a surgery. So I'm not obviously showing shot put and discus with a broken wrist. So I heal, and whatever didn't heal, so I need surgery later, but then I'm not throwing. So I need to vent. I'm not exactly the fastest sprinter. So instead, I remind you, wrestled 189 in high school. Not a small guy. I'm on the track, and my coach is, "All right, you're going to run the open 8 and the 4x8, which is the worst race ever. It's a half-mile sprint. You lay down the ball and cry afterwards."
Yeah.
But I hear you there. You know, you're like, "What the hell is this guy doing?"
Yeah. It's fun, man. I enjoyed that part, man. So it's a small town. You're pretty much the All-American Friday Night Lights, Varsity Blues. That's what I'm living at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we throw up in the washing machine, you had too much, Billy Bob style. We drink some maple syrup on the side, pick up the truck, you know, so all that good stuff.
All right, I'm there. Hey, man, Ocoee with big trucks and big Chevys. So it was either a big, you know, box Chevy on 20s, actually small spokes at the time, or it was a big Chevy 1500 on 44s. So it was 50-50 really where I'm from.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, you guys are lucky. You had vehicles, so we had red wagons. We had to pull each other around.
Keep going, man. So, all right, man. So, I get it now. You're the all-around athlete the whole time, man. So, did you go to play some college sports?
Initially, I lifted all through high school. I was recruited for football, wrestling, and for baseball. I mean, I wasn't all that big for a lineman in high school. They D-tackle offense as well, offensive line. I was all district. But then again, you're not getting too many calls when you're 190 pounds in lineman at a switch position. I just really didn't want to get my body beat the piss for college ball. To me, it wasn't worth it. My first love was baseball. So I was recruited for baseball. I was going to be signed on as a catcher. Then with the broken bone in my wrist, pretty much my entire freshman year after two surgeries, was sat it out. And they signed three players of my position in that offseason. So by year in and having taken a year off already, I decided to focus on school more instead. So I ended up wrestling for a year at the college level. And then just the time commitment. And I just didn't love the sport anymore. You know, it gets that point.
What was that like? What was that year like, man, wrestling? I mean, I played college football, but wrestling, those guys always seem to be working harder than we were. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It always seemed to be those guys were running way more than we were.
I'm just, anybody who's ever wrestled knows that wrestling is the toughest sport on the planet. It's just, it's the oldest sport on earth. There's no teammates to bail you out. It's 100% physical. It's one of the most physically demanding sports there is in terms of that.
That's why those guys can transfer to the MMA, UFC, all those different fighting styles so well. Because, I mean, that is the base, really. A lot of those guys are base wrestlers from college, collegiate level wrestlers that transition to MMA. Even some stand-up boxers will rotate. But that's for pretty much the base. You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about wrestling is amazing, just the different levels of cream keeps rising to the top. The kids that'll kill everybody in youth wrestling in junior high, they get to high school, they get their ass kicked, or they'll be, good God, even college wrestling is a completely different animal than high school. There'll be four-time state champions that won't be able to make varsity in college. There'll be college NCAA championships, okay? They won't even get a shot at making the Olympics. Everybody, I believe a good analogy of this, have you seen Moneyball, right, with Brad Pitt? A good analogy I like to use for sports, why do you play anymore? It's like, we're at some age, we're all told that we're too old to play. Some were told at 18, sometimes you're told at 40. But when you find that age, you just don't love the sport anymore, you can't stay healthy, or you want to focus on other things. Like in my case, doing a double major or stuff like that, I just, moved on, stayed healthy. And
no, man, that's strong of you to do, man. I have to point it out because, I work with athletes directly, and my specialty is either performance or ex-athletes. And a lot of the times, man, there's not a lot of attention being called to it. But when an athlete, when we lose that label, that who we are label, is when a lot of us go off the railings, man. I mean, you see addiction is high, violence is high. It gets terrible. And it seems you recouped really quick. You took that label, applied, all that same effort and energy. Like you said, you double majored, and you seem not even to, even trip up about it, man. So that's a big deal. That's a tough trench for people to jump so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you miss it, but at some point, that's all it takes on your body over those years. And obviously, I found a different avenue. I got into basic strength conditioning athletes, training as an athlete of explosive Olympic movements and powerlifting. And then, of course, now these days, I bodybuild. So you find the love of lifting as a lifetime sport. And, you shouldn't see me play golf. The baseball player in me comes out. I mean, apparently, it doesn't matter if you hit the ball 350 yards if it doesn't stay on the course.
Yeah. And my cousin, Dar Lowry, shout out to you. I haven't seen him in a while, man. We grew up together, but he took golf really serious and took a couple of shots at the pros. I guess you got to pass like a PAT or something. He missed it by like a stroke three times. I mean, he's really good, man. And that's a game. I'm telling you what, man. No,
sir. It's a game you can play your whole life and still suck.
I hate it. I hate it, man. It's not. And I used to say it's not a sport, man. That's a game. That's a game. If you can smoke cigarettes and play that and beat people, that's not a sport.
That's exactly how I've always viewed golf. It's not easy by any shape or form, but my general thumb is if you can drink or smoke while you're playing a sport, I don't really qualify as a sport.
I don't know. Maybe that's too fast, man, because who's that fighter? Joe Schilling. Joe Schilling, who he would smoke cigarettes in between bouts and before. I mean, he's a bad motherfucker.
Yes, he
is. I think one of the first fights or some of the fights he lost is when a new trainer would beg him to quit smoking. And I think one of the first bouts he lost is when he put down the cigarettes. So, I'm going to hold my tongue, I guess, and kind of say, because you see it, though. You see a guy, John Daly, and then you see Tiger Woods. And you're like, well, these are the obviouses. I'm just pointing them out, okay? I'm not a golf dude, all right? Although the hat would lead you to tell you something different, huh?
A little bit. I mean, also, you can't always generalize them there. I mean, in Tiger Woods' case, women can be bad for your health, too.
Yeah, pretty much screwed his shit up. Oh, man, you're right, man. So it seems you just took that same passion. And what are the double majors?
Exercise science and nutritional sciences. So I did both very closely related ones because it's a broad wealth of knowledge. And on top of that, one thing people ask, like, what I do these days, product development, things like that. People ask, what do I need to go to school for that? Like, there's not really a straight line to do what I do. But you don't go to college to major to do that. You just kind of do a breadth of things. For example, you do the personal training, the strength coaching aspect of it. But then I also was always very interested in supplements. So I do a lot of research on my own. And then it branched off when I got to grad school doing independent research on supplements, continuing to just like spend hours upon hours upon hours. Like when I read things, I tend to read scientific articles and abstracts because you can like look at the research in the past, look at new emerging things, and so I stay current. Then, of course, it's just like self-information, like looking, I guess, from a brand management perspective, you look what else is in the industry, what people are doing, trends, ingredients, like, oh, that's something new. What is that? Look it up. Okay, there's really nothing on this. Or you may look and say, wow, okay, they're on to something. And then you find different things that are even better than that, more closely related. It's a very fascinating thing. And, it's a lot of things. Do everything, I tell people. You know, it sucks because you do sacrifice because you stay really busy. But at the same time, at the end of the day, it's worth it. If you get that opportunity because you put yourself in place to do all these things at the right time, it'll happen.
Yeah, you asked a great question for me right there, man. I probably would have got to the point about how you get to be the guy in the lab mixing the powders and stuff. And, you know, since we're there in a straight line, so technically to get to be a formulator, if you will, kind of like what you do right now, one of the things you do right now, is there is no straight line? I mean, is it just something you can get involved with a company and learn, or is there a foundation?
Absolutely. There's different avenues that people take to get into it. Like one of the most common ones, like if you have a chemistry background, you're looking to do more like, formulation or product development in some way, shape, or form. Like, okay, I may formulate for, say, something aside from supplements, then I may have a need for an R&D chemist at a supplement company. Some people get their in from there. Other times, the biggest thing in both strength conditioning as well as supplement industry is networking. Whether it be like you, it could be, I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head, because there's numerous examples of this, but I say somebody starts out as like a GNC employee, then they become a manager. For whatever reason, they happen to catch the eye of a big supplement company. They come on as like a sales member, and then they get promoted to like, say, something like a brand manager, somebody that works more in terms of the supplement like formulation. But they may not be directly working in terms of like the nuts and bolts research aspect of it, like in the lab, but at the same time, they may help find ingredients, like make ingredient suggestions, working with the actual chemists. So there's different levels of product development. My chemistry background isn't like as thorough as most people think. I'm definitely more physiology based in terms of things like that and how it interacts with the human body versus, the different molecular levels and different stuff like that. That's not my forte. I never claim it to be. I'm more physiology.
Oh, well, that's what I like to do, is create the image of you with green gloves on and stuff, mixing it up. It becomes a team effort, though, because you merge those two, like you're saying, there's different levels of it. So, I mean, if somebody, could this be, I'm jumping right in, could this be part of the problem, though, about how we become formulators, how this is put together? I mean, to where it seems so, I don't want to say unregulated, because I don't want to regulate some shit, but I mean, I know what we're going to get into talking about how there's so much disarray and chaos about what's real, what's not, what's okay, what's illegal, what's a loophole. I mean, we're going to jump in there, but could part of it be that is that essentially if you, meet the right people, get the right thing, make the right idea and make the right product or something, then you're out there. But I don't know, man. Could it be?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, there's no, straight line to get there. And sometimes it's a whole bunch of like things of like, it's who you know. And then also depending on what you do, like a big part, ideally, if you weren't exactly a chemist may not know so much in terms of exercise physiology. They need the physiology guy, but I can make a product, but great. What am I making? Like, what do I need to put in this? Versus me, like, okay, we need, like, say, these ingredients. A good example here, like formulating something like a pre-workout, for example, in a powder. It has to be able to flow freely. It has to be, something you can be able to mix, taste, all those good things like that. So a big part of what I would do in terms of that is, okay, say we're going to put together a pre-workout, like this random on my head. Okay, we want to put these ingredients.
Pull that mic up, man, because you talk really fast.
I'll slow down.
You talk fast that if I can't get you right in the mic, I'm going to miss a lot.
Okay. No problem.
That's just because I'm a dummy and you're really smart with a lot of information. So you're like with awesome information. And so I'm going to try to write this down too.
No problem. I've been told I talk fast before, so once again, I have to catch myself at occasions. So
No, don't change yourself because of me, man.
It's all good.
Change because I'm slow.
I'm like one of those wind-up monkeys. So
you've got a lot to say, man, and it's serious. Yeah. You know? And I can tell that you're used to those three-minute interviews, mm-hmm. you know, where they kind of hit you because you were excellent. When I hit you with the three-second interview, really, I mean, you were like, and this is the product that we choose. And I mean, even with the right tone of voice above the echo of the expo, dude, it was perfect. It was spot on. But you don't have anywhere to go.
All right.
I'm kidding. Dead
people. Man, six cents of wishful is popping out here.
I'm totally,
but a big part of what we do is, like, say, a formulator standpoint is more physiology based. Like, this is what we want to put in the product because this is what it does. Mm-hmm. The thing is, with certain times, when you mix certain ingredients together, they may not work well. Like, for example, there's a very great ingredient out there. It's called Hydromax. It's a patented form of glycerol from a company called Glanbia, a big distributor. It's excellent for cell volume, hydration, and other things like that. The downside to it is when it mixes with a lot of things, it can kind of cake up. It's very hygroscopic. In other words, it attracts water, and it can do funny things to the powder. So that's, like, you know, the R&D part of, like, okay, this is why we want in here, here's research. But then, like, the chemist's job is to put, okay, how can we mix these together and keep it from becoming a brick? And kind of, like, you know, or if, like, something like a capsule, for example, you have, like, say, Yohimbe hydrochloride with berberine hydrochloride and all these different acids. Is it going to cause, like, a different, I don't know, pH that we can't have? Or is it going to eat at the capsule or something like that? You know, not like bad, but like, it's just a gelatin capsule. It can cause issues with the mixing or the compression of things. So that's the big part of the chemist does compared to, say, like the formulator, if that makes sense.
No, it makes tons of sense. And I think the microphone was working better the way you left it, my friend. Probably the way it was designed. So you could probably just let that thing go. It was working better before. Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm glad that you can make that distinction, you know, how, because, you know, people do. They would imagine two white coats standing there, right, like holding the stuff, making it right. But I get it how you have to make that transition, right? There's the transition, the guy who does the transmission, he's your specialist, you know, who can get in there and open it up when the typical mechanic can't do that. But the transmission guy, I guess he's got to know the rest of the engine, though, if we got to go that far.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, so I can see the merge, though. And what I have noticed is your degree, your exercise physiology degree. This is what I've noticed in bodybuilding and supplements and training, personal training. This seems to be the path, though. It's not, I mean, you say there's no straight line, but it seems to be that's where everybody goes toward education.
Yeah. Essentially, you want to be, especially if you're going to work in, like, say, the supplement and nutrition field, that's your closest related one. But, you know, people can come from, say, a chemistry background or things like that as well. So it's not like a straight line. Oh, I need to go to college for this because I want to do, like, your job. Because the thing is, every job that works up in the industry, fortunately, bless a lot of things people I know, it's like a job is kind of a hybrid of many things. So while I do product development, I'm also heavily involved in marketing and brand management. I'm also heavily involved in consultation, things like finding contract manufacturers, which is more on the purchasing side. I'm involved in ingredient sourcing. Then I get interesting inquiries on nutrition, you know, like some people are good at that, but then they may not be specialized in nutritional manipulations for clients. So I wear many hats. So I have expertise on many things, and that's why, you know, it's a different adventure every day.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. So, I mean, you go right into it, into what was your first gig? What was the first time, your first shot to where you're like, wait, this may be it. This is the job I've been looking for.
Actually, it was when it was on a website. It was supplementreviews.com. I actually came across it. It's very infancy. There was just dead, completely nothing on it. Started rolling with it, essentially just participating, helping out the guy that owned it. It was just dead. Kind of started, there's a question and answer section, a forum, things like that. I've been doing all this research on my own, so I kind of started posting some articles just because, you know, I was bored in college. I had a wrist and a cast and started going through it, question and answer type stuff. Lo and behold, the site starts getting momentum. And the owner of the site approaches me and says, hey, you know, I could use your help running the site. I'll pay you for this. You know, started out as basically just a helper. Then 4 years. I was with a site up until April of 2015, when I moved on to bigger things. I was the director of operations and marketing. A big part of what we did, and I know is what you want to touch on as well, as transparency industry. What it was is supplementreviews.com itself. It was an unbiased supplement review resource. So essentially what it was is a place for people to come on after they had purchased a product and write a review from it. There's no incentive to write a review. We'd police it very heavily. Like if we suspected a review was written by a biased source, we could track IPs, we could track all these different things. You know, there's many safeguards so that it keeps the source unbiased. You can't provide an incentive like money or a free product to write a review, which may persuade a positive or negative. We didn't let people spam it. There's a minimum requirement, you know, there's reputation points, a whole bunch of weighted things to prevent bias in the site. But a big part of that kind of is a great gauge for the industry to rely on. If they want a place to have reviews done for products, they can always post on there, have independent people not associated with the company test their product, review it, get honest opinions, and people have a reliable source to see what people are really saying in real time about their products. So that's a big part of how I got into the supplement industry. That was huge. Just doing that, all the companies knew me because, you know, hey, we'd like you to get our product up and running, or and branched eventually.
Did you ever get any backlash of some products that you bashed?
Oh, there's quite a few. Actually, I think the biggest one on here.
Man, you're like, holy, which one?
For the most part, at a certain point, I didn't review a ton of products myself. I kind of focused more on the nuts and bolts of the site, recruitment of members, people, but good quality reviewers, because one is like, you know, the head guy. There'd be certain products like I'd review. There'd be certain ones like, all right, they'll be buried soon enough anyway. I don't really need to say anything. Kind of went on for it. And then kind of need final judgment on things. I'd weigh in. But really, the best thing I've learned in supplement industry is, you know, honesty and good reasoning behind things is the best way to go. Whether it be in your network, you never want to burn bridges. You never want to throw anybody under the bus. Play nice, because nobody's completely innocent, I'm sure. Even no matter what company you're with, maybe the best out there, but somebody will find something back in the day that wasn't right, and they'll come after you for it. You know, so nobody's got no dirt.
I met a few people at the expo when I was interviewing that did not play nice, that threw many name brands under buses, and were not shy about it. I mean, they seem to not care. And, look at me. The video I dropped yesterday, I didn't play nice. And I'm sure I know there's flaws in my approach, because I call it a theory that tells you it's a theory. I think you're right. We all have our own flaws. So, I understand that. I can get that.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of this, like, I'm sure everybody knows that I could throw some companies on the bus that I know are doing some things they shouldn't be. But then again, a lot of them already known about. So at the same time, you know, what good's going to come of it? It's not that I'm not telling people so they don't find out and hurts the industry. But the thing is, like, everybody already knows. Me repeating what's already been said is not going to help it. And sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, it's just another person bashing this company. You know what, if they correct their mistakes, I think everybody needs a second chance to move on with it, if they've done things to rectify it. So unfortunately, you are right. There are some big names of companies that do cut some corners that are very obvious. They've been dinged with a few things in recent times, with the amino spiking or having different ingredients in their products and they're listed. But the thing is, you know, like, okay, everybody's just lining up and taking big shots at the big target, you know, while they're down, you know. Well, that's great. That doesn't do anything to our benefit. You know, the way I've always gone about things in my formulations, or anybody I've worked with, is like, all right, let's focus on what we're doing right and promoting that, rather than have a marketing plan calling out somebody about what they're doing wrong. You know, it just, you know.
Yeah, I get it. And for me, I think it's just hard for me to swallow when people are taken advantage of, you know, by, you know, just straight out direct either lies or things that aren't even real. And, you know, and it's in what you say is true, because in order to survive, like you said, in the supplement business and what you're doing, you can't bash like that, because then everybody will just gang up on you and it's over. And truthfully, in the self-help world, I'm about to figure out if it's really like that, because the way I'm kind of approaching this is going, you know what, I think people are actually becoming disenfranchised with the self-help world. They're starting to realize what's out there, the routine, how it goes down. You just wind up writing a how to get rich book at the end of your whole thing. You know, and I think people are starting to realize that, like you said, people are starting to just realize what's real, what's not. They're doing their own research. They're beginning to discern. And I could, I can see your story so much more clear now on how you were immersed in customer experience and customer response.
Yes, absolutely. So the thing is, I had the benefit of not starting with any specific company. I kind of got to be the watchdog
of the industry.
Exactly. So I didn't have to like or dislike anybody. That's the best part. You know, some people are ingrained, like right off the bat, oh, this company, that company, for whatever reason, views my enemy. But that's the nice part. I have many friends throughout the entire industry. And, you know, it's benefited me very well. And I continue to hold those relationships no matter who I work with. You know, there's no point in burning a bridge. Because the thing about the industry, it's a very small world. You never know who's going to end up where, who you're going to be working with, or, you know, down the road, what company may need your services, or, you know, what you want to do with it. So, you know what? Don't burn a bridge. That's just a good rule in life for networking, you know?
Yeah, I would try to find the two formulators that hate each other most, hire them to work together. You probably get some serious stuff.
That'd be like a, you know, like some dick flavored Archie protein.
Oh, Jesus, man. Yeah, but yeah, I guess I get that, man. You gotta play nice because you rotate, man. But I mean, let's face it, a lot of people get taken advantage of on both sides. From our side, you know, I think it was an $11 trillion industry, the self help and program type, you know, world. I mean, that is tons of money, man. And if somebody had it right, I think we would stop spending money, or at least they would have the $11 trillion or something. You know what I mean? I guess that in fitness too. And you alluded to that in supplementation yesterday is, you know, that they are just that it's supplementation. It's not replacing, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's what we talked about yesterday in a good length there is like literally it's supplementing what you're already doing and not replacing. And that's the key. People seem to forget that. They always want the magic pill. They always want the magic formula, but, you know, that doesn't exist.
Where do you think that's coming from these days, man? I mean, what do you really think? There's some generic, definitely reason. Well, I mean, what do you think? Why? I mean, why are we hunting this? You know, I think you said it yesterday, pills are money, or pills equal something.
Pills pay the bills. You know, that's why in the industry, it's a high margin product. There's how much it costs to make something, and we can sell it for. The thing is, everybody wants like a quick fix, you know, it's like the 8-minute abs, or they have, you know, the fast food, they have the quick change, whatever, you know, speed, convenience, things like that. And of course, a lot of times get like pulled apart from something. They think, oh, in this day and age, there should be something quick that I can do to fix this or get the way to look what I want. And then they kind of understand, you know, the fact of, oh shit, this is going to take some hard work, or it's going to take other things aside from that. And, you know, the marketing of the companies, and sometimes you're right there to, you know, oblige by selling them a product saying it's going to fix it. You know, you are in the fine print that always says with diet or exercise, but then, you know, it's like, okay, if I take this, I'm going to look like him, you know, be realistic. Like if such a thing existed, you know, everybody would look like that. That's not the case.
Yeah, I saw this. There was this pretty cool video. You know, it's one of them corny ones on social media, but it was cute. And these four guys or whatever there, they didn't feel masculine. And so they spent hours photographing them and airbrushing them to look like four of these famous sexy guy photos. And I mean, they weren't right there, but by the time they were done with the touch-ups and the Photoshop, you're like, geez. You're like, wow, all right, so you can make anybody look like anything. You know, it was interesting to see the anthropology hat on that I was wearing after it was over, kind of going, what does that say? You know, what's it say that when you saw it, what you think, what we think, that we have to actually touch it up? This hunt for perfection, you know, this hunt for optimization, man. I mean, that's what drives, I mean, your market anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just hilarious you speak on that. One of the things think of an example there is, don't always believe things you see in the photos. There's this big bunch of bullshit that has happened on Instagram. Yes, Instagram rules the world, I know, in terms of shreds.
Wait, does it now? Is that it? So Instagram runs the social media world now? Because we all know Facebook's dropping. You know, that's the way of the baby boomers and the new parents that just had kids. So,
wow, Facebook owns Instagram.
Yeah, right. So now they're connected. So Facebook's way out has been Instagram. So they just rebirthed themselves. All right. So Instagram, is that it? Because you're 25.
No, 26 as of today.
That's right. Happy birthday, Drew.
Thank you.
Yeah, everybody sing along with, no, don't. But happy birthday to you, man. A cool 26, man. That's cool, man.
I know. It was great. You know, back a quick joke here. I think the best year was when I was 23 years old, because then people ask how old you are, and I'd say, well, I'm 23, but nobody likes me, because there's a Blink-182 song. So you can always tell somebody old, how old somebody is, you know, because nobody likes you when you're 23. What's my age again? But if you don't get the joke, I'm like, she's too young for you, bro.
That's true. So yeah, man. So I like to tap into it because me being 30, yeah, I'm 34. I'll be 35 May 29th. And so I get that demographic and really my demographic, I don't know. They either are or aren't on social media, but I'd still say that Facebook runs that 34 to 44 era.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then underneath that, so you're just underneath me and you're saying Instagram, that's the rebirth of it. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter and she's at Snapchat all day and Twitter is pretty much, excuse the pun, but gone the way of the birds.
Yeah, it's like nowhere near relevant. Twitter had its day and it's just kind of out, and Instagram and Snapchat with the ruling. But the point I was making there, just like in terms of like
How the fuck we get all the way to damn Snapchat?
Yeah, before we circle the wagon, we kind of come back to the point.
That's what the rampage is about, man.
Exactly,
We
exactly.
walk down every alley looking with the damn light on, going, anything down this shit? Let's walk down this
Exactly.
hallway and then come back out the rabbit hole.
And explore it. It never what you see on social media or ads is what it's going to appear to be. There's so many people, with the angles, it'd be Photoshop, it'd be lighting, all that crap. People are going to modify their image, and of course, people are going to see that. I'm like, man, I can never look like that. I'm like, you can't. Even the person in the picture doesn't look like that.
Yeah, that's what they were saying in that video, the one I was watching. They're like, see, they don't even. And even if they do, I think it was, who's the soccer player, Ronaldo?
Yeah, Ronaldo.
Yeah, the other guy is supposed to be the most perfect body right of all time. And you see the picture, and then you see the touch-ups, and then you see what they do to the – by the time the one guy they just did up with the makeup and photo, I was like, I think he looks better than Ronaldo. It was amazing, how they do that. But it does. It tears apart our psyches, man. I wrote a paper when I was getting my master's degree about – what was the title? That I don't know. Marketing was the end of humanity. That marketing ended marketing was the end of the world.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. Is once we created that, we began to fuck with the psyche so much that all these symptomatic behaviors start popping up, and we don't even know why.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we create our own beasts, and of course, you have a lot of outside influences. Like you're saying, really, extrinsic motivation. It's all the outside influence. You may have your own thoughts, but then again, at the end of the day, you realize, like, oh shit, okay, that really did impact me from the outside and change my perspective, or may have swayed me in one way or another, even more so than most people think.
Yeah. What was most influential to you after high school, after the sports? What kept you going, though? What made you want to stay in kind of that customer service realm? You're staying between the chemist and the shelf and watching out for the client when some people are out front selling to the client, So what's keeping you or kept you in that side of the industry?
Well, mainly in what I love doing right now is like I hate sales. It's all numbers driven, and you just lose the art of the design. I like to have a say of what goes into the products. I like research. You don't go to grad school and say exercise physiology if you can't handle research. That's for sure. For all the papers and studies and shit you have to do. So you don't generally love that, or you can't hack it, you won't make it there. But then the thing is, like, you're in it. You're like, you know what? For some reason, I like this. How can I do this for a living? I love supplements. I love research. And, I really feel that I can make some cool shakes. See somebody's product, you're like, wow, I can do better than that. I'm like, all right, you know what? We'll see if I can. Lo and behold, you're blessed with the right breaks and the right people to get a chance to do so. You prove it works and you back it up by intelligence and science and research and people who listen to you. That's the key. If you come with your guns drawn, this is what we're doing, things will work. And that's how it goes.
What was the first one, man? It sounded like it looked like you were proud of something that you did. What was the first one that kind of put you up when you made it and you're like, look, I did something.
I think the first time that I really basically the launch pad of me being big in the industry. The funny thing is I know a lot of people in the industry will know who I am, but like a lot of owners of companies will, which is really entertaining, the owners themselves, because of what we did. Really the coming out party, I guess.
Look, I'm just backing you up, bro. I'm sorry, but I'm backing your ass up here because if you didn't catch the interview, anybody listening in the Europa, and you may not go back to it, I'll say that I did talk to, it was like an owner or VP or somebody of the product that they had hired you to represent. And I was like, yeah, can I have an interview for the show? And he was like, you need to talk to that guy right there, the mad scientist. That's how he referred to you as. And so, I mean, you're right. He's saying, I'm just backing you up, dude. So anybody listening, everybody watching, when he's saying that, it's dead true, man.
Yeah. Appreciate. I know exactly who you're referring to, saying that's hilarious. He still calls me Dr. Drew. I'm actually prepping him for a contest right now. Oh, I've known him, that guy. The guy is 56 years old. He's doing his first men's physique show, and the dude is shredded.
Nice, man. What's his name? If he doesn't mind, I'd throw him out there. He's living his cognitive rampage, man.
Yeah, absolutely. The guy's name is Steve Harrison.
Yeah, that was good, man. Well, Steve Harrison put us together, man, so I love that dude. You know, he didn't take the interview. He could have deboed it, you know, oh, ESPN, all that. He's like, no, that right there.
Yep. Yeah, Steve's a good dude. You know, he's a good client. I actually do his for free. A good friend of mine, you know, is proud of the guy. You know, it's helped him a lot. He's, you know, just kind of give him something to focus on. And, you know, he's a great person. You know, I was happy to help him with that, and he's very thankful for that. And like, no, it's all right, but... Bam. I'm happy to help him achieve his goal.
And what I just said, bam, instead of the full version. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Giving his little his product some love a little bit without labeling you.
That's all good. But, you know, the first like big thing that you really know that you've made it, we actually did a booth at Supplement Reviews at the 2013 Olympia. And that was just awesome. You get there, you're like, then all of a sudden, like, the momentum of what just came from that, the presence we had there was just, like, monumental. Just the meetings we had, the people coming up, like, oh, my God, you're that website. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, people, you know us. They see Walker Expo. Like, keep doing what you do. So it's kind of cool. Then just from that, interestingly, had a few people approach me in the industry, like, after seeing the reviews I wrote and my breakdown of the product. I was like, all right, well, fine, if you... You know, what do you want to see in here? Why would you put it in there? And they, you know, picked my brain, and lo and behold, one step after another, I end up helping people formulate their products. They consulted for what they put in their products. Like, hey, how can I back up this with research? Do we have anything to stand on here? How would you market this? Just like some side consulting things in terms of, all right, here's what I would do. And then now I get to kind of do it on my own. So it's pretty awesome. I've transpired from an outside perspective consulting into more of a full-time, this is what I do type of gig.
Yeah, that's cool, man. I think a lot of people, you know, I was talking to my friend the other day. I'm not going to put him out there, but a lot of people get to this place to where we're working into something and, you know, we want to make a change or do something else. And, you know, I encourage people to not use your resume to look at something new to do. People look at what are my skills? What am I good at? And then sometimes they just follow that their whole life and wonder why they can't ever be happy. You know, and what you did is you sharpened a skill instead of just saying, hey, I have a skill to mix, you know, ideas of, you know, you really didn't have a skill for that, but you went and learned that and then sharpened it. You know what I mean? No, it's the truth. I mean, what I'm saying is that when you're, if I have a resume to like fix something, I can get good at that. I can sharpen that. But for you, you had to go learn it. You had to get the competence and then sharpen that tool to go that way, essentially. You know what I mean? And like you said, there's no straight line in a resume to get to your job. You know, you just kind of found something you love to be around, not so much something that you were an expert at. You went and had to become the expert at it. You know, and so I tell people that look for changes, you know, in jobs or careers is, you know, doesn't have to be something that you have the resume in. Look for something you love to do, something that's fun, and then go become the expert at it. You know, go learn. And you did that, Roy. I mean, you immersed yourself from day one in this. I mean, this is by far, you know, what you do.
Yeah, and I'm just blessed to do something I love every single day, man.
Yeah, so let's get into some trash, man. Let's get into this, dude. So what do you got, man? I know you told me you had some written down stuff. Maybe you had some. Let's get into it, dog. I mean, we rampage a little bit when we were just texting and talking back and forth. The ESPN stuff interview, you and I ranted afterwards and, you know, way before. And I kind of just want to dive into this stuff. Man, we could talk about, you know, the industry on the surface all day, but I want to get into the rabbit hole of this motherfucker, man.
Okay. I know a big portion of yesterday, what we talked about like the origin of things that are like ingredient-wise. A big thing, a big problem these days in the industry is that sometimes it comes down to, as simple as sounds, ingredients. What I mean by that yesterday, for those of you tuning in for the first time today, a background on this is there's a big issue these days with stimulants specifically. It's fresh in my head. I've been doing quite a few questions on this, could be consulted about this. The funny thing about these quote unquote new stimulants is they're not really all that new. Essentially, back in the 1920s, when ephedra first came on the scene, it was in everything. Everybody was ephedra. It was such a huge, huge hit by one company that all the other companies couldn't get their hands on it because one company had a kingpin. So they went to the lab and started finding things that were chemically similar to ephedra in terms of, you know, for the stimulatory effect. So there was all these Frankenstein chemicals that, you know, basically amphetamines, methamphetamines, different things like stimulant wise. And there's this wealth of different things that are designed to mimic what ephedra does, but on a chemical level. So what's happening these days is, like, with these things, technically for a supplement, quote unquote, to be put into a product, it has to be considered safe. It has to be naturally derived. So a good example of this related to the stimulants is geranium stem. Everybody's heard of that last few years.
Yeah, that was the name. I couldn't remember. Geranium stem, right?
Yes, geranium stem.
Talk louder if you can, man. I don't know. Can you? I think you talk fast and low, and that's why. Talk as fast as you want, but say it loud.
Okay. How about that? A little better? Perfect.
So, yeah, I can hear you.
Essentially, with the geranium stem and all of them, the issue with it was is that for the compound, they could technically put it in there because and label it as geranium stem. However, the case is that some of these stimulants, like with geranium stem, the amounts of this compound getting it out of the geranium stem extract would not be anywhere near the purity of a synthetic version of that thing. So since it's a synthetic version created in a lab, it's not natural anymore. But if you list it as geranium stem, the natural extract, there we go. It's not a new ingredient. We don't have to list it, and therefore, you know, it's a loophole. Some people go as far as saying, oh, we can find this in this plant, so it's considered a natural extract. But that may not be the case. Or, hell, some of them have gone as so far hypothesizing, oh, we should be able to get out of this one and not really have any basis whatsoever. That's a few and far between, fortunately, but oftentimes it's a matter of purity of the synthetic version compared to the natural one. And even then, your supplier can completely fuck you if you go in to buy an ingredient and say, oh, let's say this extract, we can only have new ingredients, get like, you know, because we don't want to put all this money, buy this ingredient, and get sued by whoever because we have to pull it off the shelf because it's like it ends up being banned. So that big question you have to ask is, can we or can we not get that ingredient from the natural source that the supplier is saying? That's a big part of one thing that we have to fight with new research. You know, you find an independent lab to test a product. So it's a very interesting and ongoing and moving piece in that regard.
I'm in class, baby. I'm taking notes. I'm in class right now. So you just, the whiteboard, you just go to work, man. You preach on, man.
All right, perfect. So that is a big part of that these days is in terms of this, the different stimulants and ingredients is like they're called like a NDI, which is one word, which is a new dietary ingredient, or another one for ingredients that are, I guess, considered controversial, even if a natural one, they're called GRAS status. So there may be some safety concerns, but it's called generally regarded as safe. So there is a bunch of different areas in ongoing parts of iffy ingredients in the industry. I don't mean to scare anybody away. I mean, like, chances are your protein's perfectly, like, has nothing to worry about. But things with the stimulatory effect are some of the more hardcore pre-workouts or fat burners. I hate the word fat burners. Thermogenics may have some more of those ingredients in there. I know yesterday we also briefly talked about another gray area in the pro-hormone area. Essentially what that was, when we were talking about PEDs, was that it's illegal to sell steroids, obviously, or anabolic steroids. So the gray area when the pro-hormones are big is what pro-hormones are, is they are synthetic compounds that are not technically that steroid. However, when ingested in the body through a 1-to-2-step conversion, become a steroid. In other words, so that'd be by the process by the liver or the organs, things like that. And therefore, they're literally selling steroids over the counter as supplements. So there was another gray area there. Third most I'll touch on here before we can, you know, shift a little bit, is there's things called the research chemical realm. There's things such as clenbuterol or selective estrogen receptor modulators, things like that, where they're essentially research drugs. And what that means is, like, for example, with clenbuterol, you've heard of inhalers, correct? Okay. So, like, with inhalers, albuterol is the one that's used in all the inhalers these days for the most part. Clenbuterol is a cousin to that. And the biggest reason is when it was in clinical testing with clenbuterol, they decided they weren't going to pursue testing anymore because the Drug Administration saw that the half-life was too long. So therefore, if it's ingested, it stays in the system for too long of a time compared to albuterol with a shorter half-life. So the reason that's important, if somebody ingests...
What was the half-life? What were the half-life for the first one, for albuterol?
Buterol is, I believe, I don't remember this quote. I don't remember off the top of my head. It was short acting, 4 to 6 hours versus I believe the other one's like 10 to 12.
All right, I'm just trying to catch the difference. All right.
It was a pretty drastic difference. Once again, I don't want to misquote. I know it was significant.
Like, yeah, remember, you ain't on the fucking radio, so let a bitch research this shit. If he's saying 4 to 12 and it's fucking 6, email me if you have no life.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, absolutely. Once again, not to misquote, I have to double check. It's been so long since I've looked at that number because I don't –
I knew it was a field, but just I wanted a vision, that's all.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pretty vast difference. But the reason that's important is if somebody takes something that has an adverse effect as a prescription, they need to get out of the body quicker, therefore the side effects go away. So the reason, what the whole point of bringing this up is that clenbuterol is used as a cutting drug in bodybuilding or in figure competitions. Because while it may be a bronchodilator for asthma, it also has a quote-unquote side effect of increasing metabolism by a drastic amount. Like you sweat bullets on it, you can just drop cut fat like crazy on it. It's a beta 2 agonist.
Whoa.
Yeah. it's awesome.
I have to go back and, all right, I got to be this student. Mm-hmm. Mr. Lowry? Yes. Yeah. Can we back up and first start out with spelling the name of the one that is this ultimate fat cutter that cuts fat in half? What are we talking here? What is it?
Clenbuterol.
Clenbuterol. All right. And we can find this, where at?
Disclaimer, do not buy this, but you can just buy it online. Research chem sites. Allegedly not. You can buy it perfectly allegedly, online.
Yeah, allegedly, we maybe allegedly, right? We could buy it online, maybe, right?
Yeah, possibly, if you knew where to look.
Allegedly.
It's not illegal to buy. The thing is, it's...
What? Okay, keep going.
It's not illegal. It's perfectly fine to buy under the right circumstances. It's not sold as a dietary supplement. That shit would not fly. You cannot sell a research chemical as a dietary supplement. However...
Not yet, anyway.
Exactly. They can sell them online for research purposes. Therefore, you click the little waiver that you said, this is not for human consumption. My mice are really fat. I just want to test them in my lab, so I'm going to buy some Clen and feed them to my mice. Therefore, you can buy it.
Oh, my God. Keep going, brother. Okay.
So that's another good example of another gray area. That isn't so much supplements. It's another, I guess, more on the bodybuilding side of things.
Where now, I've had an interest lately over two things, actually, that maybe it's hopefully. Let's walk down this hole, man. I hope you got some knowledge here. Is 5-HTP and things like nootropics.
Oh, nootropics. All right. So... Interestingly, once again, this is a very emerging area. I haven't done a ton of work in 5-HTP.
Young, man. It's young like you, bro. So I'm going to assume you know more about it than me because you're young.
Honestly, just because it's such a broad area, I haven't been my area specialty very vaguely, in all honesty. But nootropics is kind of the way things are going these days in terms of supplement industry and, of course, of what is legal and not legal, things like that. Because a good example of this is to the point of pre-workouts and thermogenics, like for pre-workouts. First days, most would have like 150 milligrams of caffeine. Everybody in the industry catches up. Everybody adapts to having that much caffeine. They got to make something that's harder.
How much did you say?
Initially, like 100 to 150 milligrams of caffeine back in the day. Everybody adapts to that. They get hooked on pre. They have to make something more potent. The next thing you know, it's 200. Then the next thing you know, it gets bumped to 250, then 300. And then finally, the ceiling of about 400 milligrams of caffeine is basically like the highest you'll see these days. I mean, few will go over that, but the thing with the point of caffeine is our point of diminishing returns in terms of increasing performance. It's a bell curve. A little bit high performance, then it starts getting detrimental when it's too high because it can cause anxiety, heart palpitations, and you can overstimulate it. It can actually take away from performance.
Yeah, so, unless you have ADHD. If you have ADHD, caffeine actually acts as a focus drug and can replace Adderall.
Exactly.
Allegedly.
Can't tell people, to do or do not.
Don't ask your doctor, because what I say on every fucking episode, that any doctor prescribing antidepressants is practicing out of his or her scope. So your neighborhood physician should not be prescribing you antidepressants. But legally they can. But I'm here to tell you they're practicing out of their scope. Proceed, sir.
It's the same deal with the doctor talking about dietary supplements, and people think, oh, they're a doctor. They know, like, they haven't been trained in it. They don't.
Well, doctors didn't even have a nutrition class. The younger MDs that are coming out have had more nutrition training. Some of the old doctors, it was not, maybe not even one, or it'd be a nutrition class.
Here's a good example for you here. Just no names here. One of my GPs, maybe current, maybe not, once again, not against specific care, is an older woman. She's probably in her 50s, I'd say, like her 50s, but whatever. She's a bigger woman. Okay, so I go in, and I'm just getting my, this is my regular checkup. You know, I moved down to Florida here. I need my GP, so I go in the office there. And she's doing my blood pressure, my weight, all things like that. And it's like, oh, have you had blood work done lately, cholesterol, things like that? And then I'm like, oh, no, I haven't for probably about a year now. Okay, we'll get that done. So I get on the scale. You know, I'm in my off-season, the bodybuilder. I'm still lean. I'm under 10%, and I'm sitting at 256. And so she does say, okay, my blood pressure is actually always abnormally low. I believe it's like 109 over, I believe, 62. You know, normal, like the maximum normal is like 120 over 80. So it's relatively low. So good and good. Then she tests my cholesterol, and then she, you know, once again, test it, come back to the follow-up there, and then my HDL, out of all things, was just slightly low, like by like 1 or 2 points. My LDL was great, so my total cholesterol is perfect. If anything, she's nitpicking, like, the HDL was low. So then she looks at me, it's like, oh, well, the only concern is your HDL is a little bit low. So I'd like, you know, what is the ratio of lifting compared to cardio? So I have this overweight doctor telling me that I need to do more cardio.
Hold on. No, you didn't.
Yeah, I'm like, okay.
Now, when you say overweight, are we talking obese or are we talking thick?
Say obese.
Wow, an obese. Well, for one, there's two people that piss me off when they're obese, and that's one when it's MDs and two when it's fucking cops. But hey, shit happens though, right? We all go through shit in our lives. Sometimes we hit places, so I don't want to douse that. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Sometimes we deal with stuff, but it's kind of feel pretty shitty though. Standing there going, really? Lady, you're talking to a young-ass formulator, nutrition, bodybuilder guy with near-perfect scores, and you want to tell me to do more cardio?
Yeah, she's like, oh, like, what's your diet like? I'm like, well, it's pretty immaculate, my bodybuild. I mean, my off-season, I still don't go off my damn diet. How long do you work out a day? Typically an hour to an hour 15. How many days a week? 7. Oh, well, what's the ratio of lifting and cardio? Oh, she had to find something. You know, just as a GP, she has to say it. But I'm like, woman, are you fucking kidding me? I even go to the extent of making sure my fat sources optimize omega-6 to omega-3, and you're bitching about HDL. Like, give me a fucking break.
Oh, man. Well, she's got to flex the MD muscle somehow, right?
She's a sweetheart. She meant well, but at the same time, I'm like, is this really happening right now? Okay.
At least she didn't give you an opiate.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that they, you know, I heard they got opiate machines out front. You put a quarter in and you just turn the shit. Yeah. Like 6 of them come out.
Oh, man. South Florida. I think Flock is a drug of choice these days.
Oh, my God. Who knows, man? So, I mean, all right. I love this where we're going, man. Look at this shit. I'm learning, man. I do this every episode. Go back. I took us off course with the whole squirrel, man. Let's go. Am I saying it right when I say neurotropics or is it
nootropics?
Nootropics, man. It just sounds like a place I want to go to.
Yeah, it's a very cool, like, in terms of cognitive-focused drugs. Once again, hell, I mean, even caffeine can be a nootropic. If it makes you feel mentally more alert, more crisp. There's a lot of different ones out there these days. Like, I'm not going to...
What do you know? Yeah, what do you know about them? Tell me about them, what you know from... Even your little bit is going to be more than my any bit, so...
What I'll leave it at is this, therefore I don't misspeak. Once again, it's not my specialty in terms of nootropics. It's something I'm currently researching and learning more about because I love to learn. The point I was getting at with the caffeine and pre-workouts up to 400 milligrams is that companies are starting to see, like, okay, damn, we're getting to this upper limit of caffeine here. Where can we go from here? Like, if we can't keep increasing the caffeine, we got to make something to make people feel good, lock in, things like that. So then what companies started to do is they started to put in other ingredients that could help cognitive focus, such as nootropics, so therefore it's not adding more stims, but it's going to help provide mental focus, mental clarity, and, you know, enhance the performance of the workout. One of the biggest ones for focus was picamulin or picatropin, which actually got pulled from the market because, once again, it came down to the magical word of new dietary ingredient.
What was the name of that again?
Picatropin, P-I-K-A-T-R-O-P-I-N, picatropin.
Picatropin. So that was on the market. Then they pulled it because of the stuff you were talking about earlier being an API.
Yeah, a new dietary ingredient, and some say, you know, this not safe.
What was it? What was the new dietary ingredient they said that classified it that got it pulled?
Well, they're saying just that it couldn't be naturally gotten from an extract.
Where was it coming from?
A lab.
Yeah, they just put this shit together somewhere. It had no natural properties at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it can hypothetically, within the case of that, it was, you know, a synthetic version. The thing is, it sucks, is that was a great ingredient. You have a badass focus from it.
You know? Yeah.
So essentially,
what are the catalysts? What are the what are some of the what's the word I'm looking for? The not catalysts, but help me out here.
The pathways of which they work, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Well, how are they working pathways? But it's not actually the word I was looking for. What's the Kickstarter? What's the what? Come on, I'm losing my mind here. Not catalyst, but the. Oh well, somebody's yelling at me in their car to listen to live, or they're listening to this podcast. Yeah, on Monday, where they're screaming the word, they're telling me what it is.
We both hit that blank spot. You know, the guys with master's degrees were the idiots somehow.
Right. Come on, Adam. When they come together, something happens.
All right. You're sitting by yourself tonight eating some ice cream, chilling there on your couch, and you're like, fuck me.
I will too. I'm like, what the? And anyway, so how's it work? How's the catalyst work? I keep using that word, but
essentially they work to increase brain function. And the simplest way of putting that is they increase, whether it be blood flow or just like the way the neurons fire, and just help the brain mentally focus. That's the simplest way of putting that, you know.
Any one or two activating chemicals or activating compounds? Maybe that's what I was looking for. The activators. That's not it either, but you know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah. Once again, the best way I'm going to put this is I'm still learning on this. And the best, my train of thought with this is, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough. Therefore, I'm not going to try to explain something that's not my specialty.
You know what we sum that up to is, stay in your lane, homie.
Mm-hmm. And nootropics not my lane. You know, once again, it's so new in the market that I'm more in turn. My specialties are in fatty acids. And branched chain amino acids and aminos, like specifically branched chains and the fatty acids. Those are my two specialty ingredients, along with creatine.
Okay, well then 5-HTP is off the table then too, huh?
Yeah, just in terms of, like, I can tell you a bit about it, but it won't be anything mind-blowing compared to like some of the shit I can tell you about fats or creatine. You know?
Okay, go there.
Okay.
Class is back in session, sir.
All right. This is actually, I don't know why, whatever, fats are my favorite macronutrients. There you go. I said there were macros, and he like punched myself.
Yeah, he's smart. Smart guy. He used the word macro. He knows what he's talking about. Buy his shit.
Fats are very fascinating. They're one of the most powerful things on the planet in terms of how they can influence your diet. Most people, they like to think things of cut and dry when it comes to fat of good or bad. Or they get a little more scientific, or they say saturated versus unsaturated.
Or trans fat, right?
Or trans fat, you know. Well, trans saturated is a saturated fat, technically. I'll touch on that in a second.
Remember, we're not you. We don't know what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like the Franken fat. The truth of fats is, most people will say, should I eat this kind or should I not? That's not always the case. The best way I put this is, you do a balance of a little bit of everything. Because some people will say,
so low trans fat or no trans fat is bullshit or doesn't mean anything, or is bad?
I'll start out with trans fat. Transaturated fat is bullshit. It's a chemically synthesized version of fat. Essentially, what they're doing is they're taking an unsaturated fat and molecularly changing it, injecting hydrogen into it to make it a saturated fat. That way, it's literally a man-made fat.
Why would they do that?
Well, essentially, back in the 40s and 50s, when they were looking for cooking alternatives, especially like fast food, is that traditionally foods cook better in saturated fat compared to unsaturated fat. And the downside of saturated fat is that they don't have as long of a shelf life. They come from animal sources. So what they did is, they were taking an unsaturated fat source, whether it be a vegetable oil, corn oil, so on and so forth, and they'd inject it with hydrogen, making it a trans saturated fat. Therefore, they could sustain a higher smoke point, or aka the point that can be heated before it burns. It increases the shelf life. All these wonderful things. But then it also, your body can't digest it. It causes digestive issues. You know, it can lead to cancer in some cases. There's really no need. Yes, there can be some naturally occurring transsaturated fats. But the shitty part about this is, you know, the food industry runs so many things. Technically, a product can claim to have 0 grams of trans fat if it has less than half a gram per serving. So zero doesn't always mean zero. you can have something that has like 0.4999999 to infinity amount of trans fat or fat per serving, and still your trans fats add up. Like, say an average American diet, like say they have like two servings of chips. It's made, like, for example, just throwing this out there. They have, like, say, two servings. Okay, if each one had just under half a gram in a serving, you had two servings of chips, you're almost at a gram a day. Say, like, you have, like, a meal later on, something processed. Once you claim the same thing and you have a serving of that, there's a gram and a half. And then you round out your day, they have, like, some, hell, they have, like, some cheap cookies with their kids, something like that, and has some trans fat in there. But the daily limit is 2 grams is what generally considered safe. And without even knowing it, you're on your paper, you add it up, you have no trans fat in your diet, but, you know, they can sneak in. That's a shitty part of how they can deceivingly label something as having no trans fat.
Yeah, Brett, actually, Richard, the host of ESPN, was talking about in the nutrition report yesterday, and it was a lot of math, so I lost him. And he got into some math part about 2,000 calories can equal up to like some half a gram of trans fat, and then they can say that it has no trans fat acid or something. I don't know. You're going to have to listen to that show when it comes on, man. It's funny how we got in that realm. So really the trans fat is just
it's a Frankenfat.
Yeah, I love how you said it. So it's just a Frankenfat that they put in stuff so it lasts longer.
It's one of those things that really has no benefit to it whatsoever, aside from the longer shelf life. It's just a product rather than a food. But let's not bag on that. Let's talk about some good things in terms of fats.
You radio motherfucker. Did you catch yourself right there? Did you catch yourself in that 2-minute interview mode you flipped back to?
Yeah, this is
talk about some good things. That was good, though. You're fucking good, man. You're fucking good.
Hey, I appreciate the words, my brother. We'll do some big things if people, you know, don't break off the knob on the radio, then might tune back into us again.
Hey, not my listeners, man. My listeners know uncomfortable is where the change is. So we sit in that uncomfortable, holy shit, I could be wrong idea. Now, we may not like it, and we may bitch and moan while we're sitting in the middle of that uncomfortable shit, but at any minute, we're going to go, yeah, I get it. We're wrong. You're right. Exactly. I'll fight your tooth and fucking nail. It'll look like I'm challenging you, and I'm poking at you, and I'm debating you. But what people always forget is at any second, I may just go, damn, you got me. You're right. Exactly. You're right. You got me. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Let's do it, though. So let's walk through the story. And you're seeing more and more of this with this primal blueprint diet, Mark Sisson talking about this.
There's a lot of good things, but like what I guess I was getting at is like, you know, okay, first of all, fuck trans fat. There's no reason to have in your diet. But from the things, unfortunately, in diets in general or nutrition is not simple. Nutrition is complicated. And that's okay.
A lot of people say different, right? A lot of people are like, it's easy. You just eat things that don't have ingredients and you eat X amount a day and that's it. Oh, did I lose you, brother? Oh, it may have lost him. That's all right. We'll get him right back. No worries. He's pretty quick with the technology. So I'm surprised we've gone an hour and 10 minutes without a hiccup yet in the technology. That's pretty good, especially because it's been pouring down here in Orlando. The sun just came out, as you saw my face, not too long ago, but generally quick, and he's always right back like I said he would be, man. So we started walking out of the trans fat era and into talking about some good positive things like the saturated fat.
I'm back.
Yeah, yeah, I got you, brother. I've been introing you the whole time. Looks like you came from another channel.
Yeah, for whatever reason, my Surface is shut off. It's on the damn charger. I don't know why, but it just shut off, so I immediately grabbed my phone, and we're back on.
Hey, no worries, brother. I got to make a confession. I kind of like it sometimes when it goes out because then I get to talk as long as I want to. And you know, one of the challenges for me, honestly, man, on this podcast, every time I sit down and I fail every single podcast, my goal is to bite my tongue and not say anything. And the longer I can do that, the better I've done on the podcast. And I get to fail all the time.
And you know what? It's great because it's engaging. You want to, like, oh, shit. You just want to learn more. That's awesome. So I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah. But keep going. You know, I'm here today. So walk me down the saturated. We were talking about the – I had mentioned a question about Primal Blueprint, Mark Sisson, and this idea about, you know, eating good fats. Well, I've heard 50-55% of the diet.
I haven't learned, once again, I mean, I don't mean to have my own blinders on in my own little world there, but I think people, like, they generalize too much. They try to put things too much in numbers. The main thing that I've been interested in fats is people like to simplify good or bad. When they talk saturated fat, is it good, is it bad? Well, that's not always the case. There's more than one type of saturated fat. there's more than one type of unsaturated fat. And the funny thing is, there's always a positive and a negative to every single kind. Like, for example, in unsaturated fat, everybody thinks, you know, oh my goodness gracious, unsaturated fat's the best thing ever. Okay, what's what are you talking about? Okay, say pick like
avocado.
Monounsaturated, which would be like omega-3s, okay? So with that one, that's fish oil, omega-3s. They're great. They're great for digestion, your heart health. They can be improved mood if you have like a certain amount of grams. There's just a bunch of great things in terms of omega-3s. However, the downside, okay, the con, if you're using high amounts of omega-3s in your diet, it can be overly antithrombotic. In other words, it prevents clotting in the blood, but if you have too much omega-3s, it can thin your blood too much and your blood will not clot properly. So that can be a side effect. Another one, which is very, honestly, very overdone these days in diet, big thing people need to focus more on, is polyunsaturated fats, PUFAs, think puffy, because they're inflammatory. An unsaturated fat, yes, causes inflammation. And the downside is these days in diets, a lot of people have a very high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. So therefore, they're having too many inflammatory fats compared to omega-3s, which are anti-inflammatory. The Western diet in the United States is very heavy in omega-6s because think of the sources, vegetable oil, corn oil, canola oil, all those are very high in omega-6. Even things that are...
You call them polyunsaturated, and the definition essentially of those would be what?
That's it, polyunsaturated fat. That's just the name of it.
Oh, right. Give me an example. Yeah. An example.
Oh, like corn oil, like vegetable oil.
That's right.
Basically, like vegetable derived fats, many of them are polyunsaturated. The things like even certain nuts can be higher in polyunsaturated, so it's important to check the ratios. If you look into the nutrition facts deep enough, that'll list.
Any nuts to avoid besides mine in your face?
Oh, shit.
No, I'm kidding. Which one, actually, though? For real?
Most of them, actually. Actually, one, like, once again, I don't want to like, throw them on the bus because it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Like, it's individual.
One that people will get carried away with because it is unsaturated fats, good for fiber, it's better than peanuts. It's like a lot of people, I do a lot of almonds, but they are high in polyunsaturated fat. I'm not telling not to eat almond butter. Almond butter is great. It's calorie dense. It's got a good source of fiber. It tastes good. You got a lot of nutrients in it. It's a great thing, but then, you know, it is high in unsaturated fat. So that's one thing people need to consider is, you know, exactly what their fat balance is. So basically, it's a pretty simple if you want to do it. Like a good rule of thumb is if you cook, don't use shitty vegetable oils. Use something like olive oil or even better, like a coconut oil. Or if you try to eat less processed stuff, if you don't eat things that have corn oil and all that crap added to it, that cuts down that intake dramatically. You know, that way you can
have. You scare me with the nuts thing, man, because I am a pumpkin seeds freak. And just recently, man, I'm so proud of myself. I've been a sunflower seed freak. And like since I was 10, like I used to think if they ever did sunflower seed eating Olympics, like I would win. Like I would be like, you know, glory blades out there just clicking and spitting. You know what I mean? And now I made the switch, though, off of the sunflower seeds. Once I looked up some of the damn ingredients in those David sunflower seeds, man. And some of the I was like, wait a minute. My whole life I've been eating this chemical. There's two chemicals in it. And I switch now to pumpkin seeds, which is fine. But so that's why I was asking, is there any certain nut to really avoid in mass quantities?
No. Well, mass quantities, yeah. Anything in excess is going to be bad. You know, it's just almonds. You can still eat almonds. They're perfectly fine. It's just a matter of are you getting your omega-3s as well? Don't make all your fats one kind. Don't get all of them from pumpkin seed. Don't get all of them from almond. But make sure you're having your omega-3s in there. Take your fish oil. Eat your salmon. You know, things that are high in sources of omega-3 as well, you know, to kind of balance it out. You need a balance. The same thing with unsaturated fat. There's many different types. There's lauric acid, stearic acid, palmitic acid, all those different types. Even medium-chain triglycerides are technically saturated fats. There's different benefits of each. Some can impact your HDL positively. Some can worsen your LDL so it can balance out. Some of them can be slightly inflammatory. But the thing is, you know, there's different pros and cons to each type of fat. So that's why I like to say a balance of fats is the best approach because you don't want to cut out saturated fats. Saturated fats are essential for hormone production, for healthy hormone balance. You know, they serve a good function in the body.
Saturated fats. Those are good tips about saturated. Walk through some of the saturated myths, you know, morals, suggestions, topics, you know.
Well, essentially, just keep it balanced. I mean, one that I'd talk on because it's really hot these days is medium chain triglycerides. This is a very interesting fat. And a lot of times, like, even fats, even though most people think, like, for example, do you know how many calories are in a gram of fat?
Not off the top of my head, maybe what, 1,000? I don't know.
Nine.
All right. Just nine.
Like per gram of fat, there's 9 calories. There's 9 calories per gram. Same with carbohydrates and proteins are 4 calories per gram.
I'm not a numbers guy. That's why when you ask me, I don't track my calories. I don't track my protein intake. I eat like a natural. I eat when I'm hungry. If I'm not, I'll even fast intermittently too between days. I'm too old to be all that big anymore, bro.
No worries. But like the point I was getting at is typically fat is regarded as having 9 calories per gram. However, in certain things, in capric acids, which are a type of saturated fat, medium triglycerides, they technically are a shorter fatty acid chain and only have 6 calories per gram. Therefore, these fats technically do have less calories per gram, but and they're metabolized a little bit differently. They can increase metabolism. They can have some good effects on body composition. But, you know, there's a lot of emerging fun things on fats. They can also increase mTORC in terms of the muscle protein synthesis. You know, it's just an amazing thing about what these fats can do. And that's why I don't limit, never touch that fat, never touch this.
But, one of those points from Mark Sisson's book, that blueprint they talk about is, replacing, moving to anywhere from the 50-55% range in fats like avocados, et cetera, and upping that as to keep your energy up because you're essentially eating, I think it's like 12 to 24 carbs a day because they just come through the vegetables, et cetera.
Yeah. It's essentially doing a less of a starch and a carbohydrate-based diet, like, you know, not having a direct source of grains, just like that, more toward the naturally occurring fats and proteins. So it's a nice balance approach.
I did it for a little bit, man. And I tell you what, when I didn't up the fats up all the way to 50, 55, brother, I was dead. I was falling asleep. Yep. You know, I was history. I was like 3 or 4 avocados in the afternoon I was eating, you know, try to get that percentage up there. I mean, what are some foods that are saturated actually that somebody should, you know, that are okay to balance it out with?
Saturated fat, one of my favorite ones is the big one these days is coconut oil. It's a good source of saturated fat. Any type of animal is going to have saturated fat in there, you know, so it's going to have a balance. Like it would be lean beef, chicken breast, things like that. Any animal source is going to have amounts of saturated fat. Certain fish, of course, like salmon is going to be more toward the unsaturated omega-3 side. But you know, once again, it's about a balance. There's no cookie cutter diet for everybody. Some people, you know, respond differently to different things.
Is that why you said, you know, when you were said that, you know, good nutrition is not easy? And I was kind of like, well, I've heard a lot of people and so-called pros say the difference where they say, you know, it's easy. Just eat things that don't have ingredients. Eat when you're hungry and eat naturally. You don't have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, that's like another good approach too. So I contradicting myself right here. Like nutrition is not simple. It's not easy. It's not like this, nonchalant thing. There's a lot of science behind it, but the general rule of thumb to make it simple is eat food and not food products. So less processed something is, the better it is for you. There you go. Like, I mean, it doesn't take a fucking rocket scientist to figure out that, you know, like a baked potato is going to be better for you than French fries. It's not going to be a rocket scientist to figure out that chicken nuggets aren't going to be on the same par as a chicken breast. You know, typically the less processed something is, the better it's going to be for you.
Yeah, I don't think you contradict yourself, bro, because the world that you live in is a science. Like, I mean, the world that you live in is beyond, well, just eat that. You know, I love what you said, though. Don't eat food products. That's awesome. But eat food, not food products. And yes, these are basic and you're not contradicting yourself because that's what some people need because that's what they need. But the world you live in and have lived in and are a specialist in is in these specifics down these rabbit holes of specific numbers, ingredients and measurements. So, I mean, like you said in the beginning, you said there's levels and there's that level, eat non-food products. And then there's the level that, you know, dive into even more now, man. Let's get deep. You talked about some creatine issues and some, I mean, this is a well-known supplement, you know, it's been around for a while.
Absolutely.
Let's dive in that, man, for class 3.
Okay. Perfect. Well, it's, a good chunk here. I mean, once again, you know, I got to do some other things in the office today, but I'm not cutting you short by any means, but I can talk on this for a long time, just foreshadowing. Creatine, we talked about it yesterday, is, it's one of the most thoroughly researched supplements of all time. I'll say hands down, the only one that comes close to that is probably whey protein. And creatine, there's a lot of myths, misconceptions about it, you know, whether it be the mother concerned about their son taking it, whether it be the average person thinking it's a steroid or so on and so forth. You and I chatted yesterday, like say a lot of times people will assume creatine causes cramping, creatine can hurt your kidneys, creatine is a steroid, creatine can cause, dehydration, or it can cause compartment syndrome, all these different things like that. The thing is, literally for every single one of those things, even working in the sales side of things, retail, some mom, like, I don't want creatine, or something, oh, I don't want to take creatine because of this. And like, I literally have 4 studies at minimum on every single one of those things done on human subjects, disproving that. And the key case of that is typically, well, creatine, it is like, I guess, drawing water into the cells and hydration. If you're not getting adequate hydration, it can simply amplify a problem. If you're not having enough water intake, it can, of course, make you cramp a little bit because it can amplify that you're already dehydrated. If you're having kidney issues, this is very, very, very rare. It's because the athlete was dehydrated. If they're having issues,
I feel bad. I was that coach, man. When I was coaching 4 or 5 years ago or whatever, I told a couple kids that were, 16 starting to take that stuff when I was like, no, man, it'll mess up your kidneys. It dehydrates you. That was me, man, spitting that bullshit.
Yep.
Damn, I have to take my video down, man.
It's all good. Creatine, it's one of the most amazing supplements. And everybody knows essentially what creatine does. It's adenosine triphosphate is what your muscles function on. It's what it causes them to fire. Essentially, it's a currency that your muscles use to contract to fire. Therefore, when you take creatine, it provides that extra fuel. It tops off the creatine stores, extra ATP on hand, allowing your body to perform that one extra rep or that extra, 2 extra reps, therefore translating to more work capacity, translating into more strength and then size gain. So it essentially increases.
Is there any different of function in creatine in men and women?
No, it is creatine. It's non-hormonal. It affects women and men in the same way. Yeah, absolutely. It's literally creatine is a naturally occurring thing. This occurs in like high amounts in red meat. So creatine is a naturally occurring substance. It's perfectly fine. But where I was going with that is a lot of times I only think of it for muscle performance. A big thing that I'm fascinated with, and I'm doing a lot of course, research and following quite closely, as I, don't get to do anything in the lab these days as much as I like to in terms of research, is creatine and your forte, cognition. There's a lot of good support. Once again, I can't remember all of them on top of my head in terms of supporting preventive Alzheimer's. There's creatine showing support in terms of helping athletes return from concussions. There's support of creatine helping just overall cognition and mental focus. Like literally, you can take creatine, you'll be swole and smarter. It's just a great,
We're almost to that limitless drug, man.
Exactly. Creatine, this is amazing. It's so many things it's been underutilized for. And like, even in older populations or people say, oh, older people shouldn't take creatine. It can be harmful for them, be hard on their body. No, hell, to give them creatine will help them think. It'll help preserve their brain.
Well, why such a negative spin on all this shit, man? Why the spiel of it'll kill your kid's kidneys and dehydrate you and it's not real and what?
Well, the thing is, it's all about the media and a lot of things. Something, if it's not thoroughly researched or misunderstood, it can be new. Anything that people see results from or is something that works, and obviously it's going to be the microscope, then everybody's like, okay, this could be too good to be true in terms of what it's seeing for kids taking it or athletes taking this. And then sure enough, when somebody comes on, oh, they're on creatine, it's caused that. And then the myth starts, and then, okay, A to B, what was this athlete taking that they had this reaction or whatever? Oh, it must have been the creatine. The media takes it, they carry it, and then myth becomes fact. So there's a lot of outside factors on many different things most people do not consider. So the thing is, the research has been done and all these things. And some, it just needs to be put out there even more so for people to kind of put these myths to bed. They're finally getting much and much and much better about that these days. It's dying down. But then the next part that'll be very, exciting is when it comes down to what it, like I said, can do for cognition in terms of Alzheimer's patients, in terms of all those things. And, this is a very amazing thing.
Now, wasn't there this new creatine HP or creatine? There's a new formula apparently that's supposed to be better. I actually had a couple guys, and they were guys, not girls, that told me at Europa that they had this new specialized creatine. This new, what's it called, creatine?
I once again
HP something. Yeah, you're good. You said it yesterday on the interview.
Oh, creatine hydrochloride.
Yeah. There was, but they added something.
The thing is that if you're thinking about creatine hydrochloride, that isn't new in any way, shape, or form. That's been around for quite some time now. That's one I was just talking about in general. Is really, they say it absorbs more effectively and more efficiently than normal creatine monohydrate. Therefore, you have to use less. It's more effective. it doesn't draw water in the intestinal walls. All that's great because the only studies you can find on it, they're very limited. You really can't find them with a fucking scoop shovel. Is the one of them was done in a test tube in vitro, which wasn't even in a human body, and the other one was done by the company that created Cregent hydrochloride. Therefore, I find it biased. Okay, where's your side source supporting what you're saying? It's great. You put it in a little PowerPoint. You put it out there to the world. This is what we found. But then again, okay, nobody else is, you know, supporting this to a level to make me justify the cost or say, yes, this is the superior form of creatine. So that was creatine hydrochloride, if that's what we're mentioning. But the thing is, you know, in the industry, we talked about this yesterday too, people try to reinvent the wheel. They're trying to do, you know, you're not going to reinvent creatine. I'm sure I'm going to eat those words someday. So I'm going to come up with something, but creatine is creatine. You know, there's different forms of creatine nitrate.
Go for a prediction. What's somebody, since you're so involved and you see products that are 2-3 years out from breaking. So, I mean, give the forecast. What bullshit do you see somebody pitching that is some new advanced formula of creatine?
In terms of creatine, I really have no idea what somebody's going to try to do. People have tried doing different delivery methods, whether it be chewable creatine compared to drinkable one, or whether they have like an additive to creatine. Oh, this makes creatine absorb better. You know, for the longest time, everybody's saying you had to load creatine or you had to ingest a bunch of sugar with it. So, you know, like good old Cell Tech back in the day on the packaging of the contents of Muscle Tech is like, oh, put on 6 pounds in 3 days. You look at the back of the container, it's like 10 grams of creatine and 60 grams of sugar. You know, you're super saturating your body with all this sugar. Of course, you're holding fucking water weight because you're pounding sugar, you know. But that's old school back then. It's been fixed, thankfully. But, you know, that's a good example, you know, that their self-tech was the old ongoing joke. But, you know, the industry's come a long ways. But in terms of predictions, I guess we can move a little bit from creatine this in the industry. Like you mentioned earlier, nootropics kind of popped up for a bit, and I have a feeling they're going to come back in a lot more things like that with different exciting, I guess, alternatives to these powerful stimulants, which is good. But I think you're going to see a big trend swing further. There's a lot of people are moving away, thankfully, from proprietary blends into more transparency in the industry, which is huge because this industry is going to do a lot of self-regulation.
All right. Yeah, you broke off there for a minute. Explain, though, what you mean when you say proprietary blends moving to transparent labels.
Okay. Proprietary blends, honestly, they're on the, I guess, supplements, a lot of them these days, as in companies will list the ingredients in the product, like say in a pre-workout, they have like their pump blend, or they have like their strength blend, and there's thermo or stimulant blend. In other words, within that blend, they'll list the ingredients they have, but they'll put like say 5,000 milligrams of these like six ingredients. They don't tell you how much of each ingredient makes up that, you know, certain amount. So therefore it's called a trade secret. You know, they pretend they don't have to disclose how much is in it because it's their own proprietary formula that they cannot disclose. But okay, if you have like, say, a product that has 5 grams a scoop of active ingredients, like a concentrated pre-workout, and you have creatine, beta-alanine, caffeine, and say branched-chain amino acids in a 5-gram scoop. Okay, well, here's the thing. The clinically validated dose of creatine is 5 grams, creatine monohydrate. So even right off the bat, okay, I have other ingredients in here. How can I possibly have the full validated dose of creatine if there's a 5-gram serving and I need 5 grams of creatine? There's a certain shit like that, you know. So the thing people are moving away from, they're more doing better fully dosed ingredients, or they're just making sure to list exactly how much of each ingredient is in the product. Therefore, you know, being transparent about what they're doing in their formulation.
Man, you know, I know we started about a half an hour late, man. If you got to run, what I'd like to do, man, is if you're free tomorrow, let's pick up and do a part two, and I'll put this podcast out as fast as I can, maybe even Sunday before Monday. And then we'll drop part two Monday. If you want to come back to this tomorrow, man, we've hit an hour and a half, but it was my fault. I was stuck across town and I got back here, but we're hitting an hour and a half. We can knock an hour and a half because I want to get into the protein stuff we talked about. Then I want to get into the actual science, some research, some stuff you've been pulling, man. Can you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. What time are you thinking tomorrow, good sir?
Oh, man, we'll make it work, dude. I made you late today, so make me late for whatever tomorrow. I'll shape around your time tomorrow.
Perfect. Well, I'll hit you up later tonight. We'll get something figured out there, and we'll do something in the afternoon. Is that cool?
I love it. People listen to this podcast and go, wait, you just stopped. You fed me all of this stuff and you just stopped. And that's what I love to do, man. I think this is a killer place to stop it at, man. And anytime tomorrow, I'm going to be around the house. It's tomorrow's Get Some Sunday. So I'll be hanging around, but I'll be ready to record when you are, dude.
Okay. I'm going to go finish up some stuff now. Just because, you know, I've literally been at work in this extra office for this podcast doing this. So I need to go get this tomorrow stuff taken care of. I'll talk to my girl tonight. And then I know we've got some plans tomorrow night, and we'll probably train in the morning or where she wants to train at night. Whatever we want to do training-wise, I have nothing going on.
You're live right now, so let's plan this off the air, brother.
Perfect.
Sounds good. We are doing this tomorrow, though. Part two coming up tomorrow, myself and Drew Peters. And if you watch this live, if you've been watching from our third rank member, if you're tuning in here, the viewers that you see here are not trackable. We trace those on a different system. But for those listening or those watching, we will be back tomorrow to finish this. And if you want to, email at cognitiverampage@gmail.com any questions that you have for Drew, and we'll see if we can get there. As you see, he knows if it's not his lane, he stays out of it, and he stays in his lane, as do I. So any questions you guys may have, maybe we'll try to wrap some up as you're watching this. I'm going to go ahead and put this live on YouTube, brother, and let this see out too, man. So thanks. Let's pick up tomorrow.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you then.
Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast, or I should say welcome back to the Cognitive Rampage Podcast. We are broadcasting live. Again, we are picking up part two. I'm not going to do a long lead in here because I know there's a lot of information still to come out. It is now Saturday, and we are going to lay down part two of this. We did about an hour and a half yesterday on Friday. That's me and Drew Peters. If you were listening or you're catching this as the first show, I would suggest that you go back and before you finish this one and listen to part one. But if you're so inclined and brave, then just stay with us. But anyway, Drew, welcome back, man. It's been an overnight. And what did you do? Did you gather anything, man? Or it was your birthday last night, man. So what did you get into?
Essentially, I finished up the interview with you, had some stuff in the office still, went and trained. And actually, I'm working on finally getting up through finishing Sons of Anarchy. So I had a pretty low-key night. You can see my cats with me today. Shout out to the cats out there in the world. It's going to probably be a pain in my butt. But, hey, it's entertainment, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that speaks to the commitment level of what you're doing, man. So it's your birthday last night. You're turning, what, 26 last night?
Yep. Yes, sir.
You're 26, and you just stayed at home, laid low-key. Now, Sons of Anarchy is a decent series. I finished that one a while ago, man. It's pretty good. What season are you on?
I've made my way all the way to the fifth. I actually haven't watched it so long. I forgot a lot of it, so I'm just starting from the beginning, from fresh. That's a problem. When I watch shows at home, usually I'm working on notes or something like that. I can't concentrate on the show and I forget everything. So I'm like committing to sitting down and watching finally.
Yeah, that's good, man. Yeah, Tim Ferriss actually even suggests that when you're doing work at home to actually put on a movie that you know or a series that you know by heart sometimes, and to where you can just kind of tune it out. And every once in a while, I'll let you look up, get out of your work for a second, but and then, you know, dive back into what you're doing.
Yes, it's always Sun in Philadelphia seems to work best for that.
Oh, man, that's classic, too, man. I love William Day, one of the creators of that show. He gave a speech that I use, I quote a lot. I may have even used it in the book, man. Anyway, he talked about, you know, sticking to what he thought was funny. And he had network offers that he turned down. And in this, it was a commencement speech. And what he said is, you know, I just stay with what I wanted to do because if I thought putting mittens on kittens was funny, that's what I was going to do. And he stuck with what he wanted to do, and obviously the show and some other successes followed, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you do what you love, and you know, that's what he does every day.
Right. I mean, it's true, and that's what you do. I mean, we covered your story all the into this, man, and we were leaving off. We closed out yesterday talking about some creatine, and you were talking about proprietary blends and how we closed those down. And, you know, I did like to help people put that together, you know, to summary form, the proprietary blend, you'll see it when you look on the back, right, of those ingredients to where you'll see six or seven different ingredients all summed up to one calorie total number, right?
Well, it's not so much a calorie total number. It's how they're listed on the ingredient. They're typically listed, you know, like a regular nutrition fact of the calories, so on and so forth on the top. But then below that is a section, like say in a pre-workout, like a pump blend or a stimulant blend, or, you know, strength blend. And then it has all the ingredients listed underneath that category with a, like a summary, like say like 5 grams, but then there's 3 or 4 ingredients within that 5 grams.
I got you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just kind of clarifying there. That's the last thing I wrote down in my so far 3 pages of notes that we went through. But I think, you know, I commented on there. We're going to talk about what stimulants. We were coming out of the transparency of logos. That's, I think, or of labels. That's how we got there. You know, we didn't dive a lot into specific research, you know, that you may have pulled cases for, or any specific case that we could maybe start talking about, you know, some in-depth case study or something.
Well, in terms of proprietary blends, there really hasn't been a case study done on that. However, in terms of case studies, or I guess research articles these days, the main thing to focus on is, when it comes down, individual ingredients. You know, there's certain things that people would love to have studies on, but in the industry with a lot of unknowns, like, for example, I know yesterday we talked about clenbuterol. The thing is, if that funding has to come from somewhere, if they're not going to use it for a clinical purpose, or there isn't, you know, a reason to continue researching it, it's the resources are shifted toward other things. You know, sometimes whatever has the most funding gets the most studies, or if they find a point to where they're not going to continue to research it for whatever reason, in that case, the half-life.
Yeah, that's the, you know, this problem we're having globally, actually, definitely in this country, is the lack of antibiotics, because there's not money in the research that, you know, we're essentially almost run out of antibiotics, too. When you mix the rainforest, where a lot of it comes from, long story short, you say it even happens in medicine. So I guess it's affecting, you know, supplements the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of that, supplements are, rightfully so sometimes compared to pharmaceuticals, you know, pushed to the back burner a little bit. You know, the thing is, big pharma, they have tons and tons of money. They do drive the studies. So while everything is important, of course, research on it, and that's where a lot of times, you know, kind of pick and choose what battles are done. Sometimes they're going to be a study on something that may take much, much longer to be published, just because of the funding, compared to Project B by another company for like more of the pharmaceutical type. And that's where, you know, priority wise and of course time frame come into play.
Yeah, man. So, there's so many topics. I love going somewhere. And I got a few questions last night, but they're a little specific for now. So let's, you know, we talked a lot yesterday about proteins, man. And we walked through those. You dropped some targeted information on certain proteins, and walk us through there, man. Open the lesson here, protein. Like, this is a, you know, a show for competence. So again, I got my notes. I'm open. Let's roll.
All right. The thing that people, they overcomplicate protein. I guess I'll break it down really quickly, different types of protein. You know, a lot of people think the most common one, whey protein. Another one that comes from milk is casein. Essentially, naturally occurring protein in milk is going to be a combination of casein and whey. And naturally at that level, milk protein is both of them at an 80 to 20 split. So say you have 10 grams of milk protein, you're getting 8 grams of that being casein, 2 grams of whey. So what like whey protein concentrate or isolate does is it's like all whey protein without the casein in it, or casein is the, you know, slower digesting protein. In that case, you know, if you have a casein protein, you're getting a slow one. So I know a lot of people get confused when they hear.
Yeah, I like how you said that, man. Describing that difference between here's whey protein and here's whey isolate protein. You see this word isolate in a lot of proteins.
Yes, and that's exactly what I'm covering next. There's different types. That's the way of saying, well, it's all whey protein. What difference does it make? Essentially, the difference is going to be the purity, and it's also going to be how fast it is absorbed. The basic one, so I describe this, is how can you have, a whey protein be different types? Well, essentially think of it like ground beef. It's like comparing 80-20 ground beef to 93-7 to 96-4 in terms of different types of whey. Think of like your standard 80-20, your slightly less processed, less filtered whey protein is going to be the concentrate. It's going to have a slightly higher fat content. It's going to have a little more naturally occurring sugar, maybe a little more lactose, a little more cholesterol. And it'll be, you know, less lean, and it's a cheaper protein because it's like less pure. That's not necessarily a bad thing, as the less processed something is sometimes, it doesn't strip some of the good things, like some of the naturally occurring substances in the protein. So there's a positive and negative. The next one up, a lot of people think of, is whey protein isolate. And essentially, it's a more pure form of whey protein. You know, it strips out the fat, takes out the cholesterol, so on and so forth, typically less carbs. The downside, you have to really check if it's available, the source of that whey protein isolate. There's different methods of processing. Ideally, you want to be cold processed because there's a protein out there. It was one of the first whey protein isolates. It was ion exchanged. In other words, it's chemically basically stripped, you know, and so it can denature the protein due to a combination of heat and just the chemical alteration. So it's a natural process, but then again, it still breaks down the protein in the process. So it's not as, you know, like a pure of a protein, technically. It honestly, it doesn't taste that good. It kind of has like a chemically taste compared to a natural cold process one. I mean, some people wouldn't be able to pick it out, but when you compare it to regular, it's night and day.
So the difference here is the cold process, you're saying, is what you're looking for versus the ion exchange.
Yeah, I mean, there's many, many different forms of processing it, but like typically cold process would be best.
How can you tell that on a label?
Sometimes it'll say, sometimes it won't. A lot of times when companies do a cold process, or whatever process it is, they'll list it. It'll say whey protein isolate and also like ion exchange or whatever in the ingredient profile. Some of them do not these days, so you might have to dig a little bit. And, you know, once again, it comes down to trusting a brand, what quality of whey protein isolate they're going to be putting in there. And there's one last one is whey protein hydrosylate. In other words, it's a microfractioned version of whey protein. It's the purest, hands down. It's the fastest absorbing, but it's also, one, the most expensive. And two, it's broken down a little bit. It can have kind of a bitter taste in products. So it may taste a little not as smooth as some, but however, it's a phenomenal. It's like literally easily absorbable, high quality protein. A lot of times they may even use it in things like baby formulas because it's so easy to digest, doesn't cause any digestive issues. So it's like the Cadillac of whey protein.
Interesting. So mothers could use a certain protein if it matches all these qualities in a baby formula of their own if they wanted to make one?
Well, I am definitely not going to speak to that.
Don't say yes, but I mean, allegedly, maybe with the right training, yeah. I mean, someone could do something like that.
In some formulas, if they do use a protein source aside from things, they will use like an easy digested protein, like a whey protein hydrosylate.
Okay.
Yeah. And interestingly, I guess one thing to branch off of, that's just kind of the basic using whey as an example, the different grades. There's also milk protein concentrate versus milk protein isolate. Same deal, you know, the concentrate's less pure. There's a casein, there's different types on there. There's a casein concentrate and a casein hydrosylate. And interestingly, I'll cover that in a second. There's egg proteins, which are medium digesting protein. And of course, there's the plant ones. But essentially, the primary kingpins in the protein game these days are going to be dairy based. An interesting thing in terms of speed of protein, everybody think of it this way: whey protein is typically fast, casein is the slowest, and then proteins like egg protein are going to be somewhat of a medium digesting protein. However, the fastest protein that you can possibly absorb is not whey protein hydrosylate. Instead, is casein hydrosylate, which sounds completely counterintuitive. But yeah, it's actually a patented form of protein.
The casein is what slows it down from the isolate. So you isolate it to get away from the casein, and then now the fastest one. Okay, go ahead.
Well, not necessarily. Like literally in milk, think of it this way. This is a perfect example. Have you ever seen yogurt, right? Okay, or cheese. Think of it that way. And cheese itself is almost 100% casein. Casein is a thicker, more solid protein that tends to like gel, get a little gelatinous when it's ingested. That's not a bad thing. It's just the nature of the protein. Versus whey, if you think of like cottage cheese, that's a perfect example. Cottage cheese, like the liquid, watery portion of it is going to be like the whey, and like the curds itself, the thicker gelling protein is going to be the casein. It's just how it's broken down by the body. So it's not necessarily what process, it's just a matter of how that individual protein is processed. Gotcha. But that's a good way of putting it. This is interesting that casein hydrosylate is the fastest digesting protein. It's very pricey, and it's also kind of bitter, and you know, essentially that's how it works. So there's just so many different angles.
Is there a brand out there, one you recommend that's like that, or one that could be close, or maybe, or you're looking at?
It all depends on exactly what your personal preference is. I sometimes like a blend of proteins. Like I like to do a whey and casein blend. There's some excellent ones out there. There's if you want a pure whey protein isolate, you can do that too. I know there's some really good but expensive whey protein hydrosylate proteins out there that are like a cold process whey protein hydrosylate is money, but it's pricey and it's a little bit difficult to find. Another thing people get, I guess, that aren't, they aren't familiar with, and we'll cover it in the branched amino acids and tie it into protein in a few more minutes here. But, you know, just exactly how protein works. Protein, you know, people ask if it's safe, if it's going to make them bulky. A lot of, you know, no offense, ladies out there, they assume that supplements or protein will make them bulky. That's not the case. Protein is simply the building blocks of your body. They're amino acids. And anytime you're supplementing, this is a good example here, ladies, if you strength train and you take protein or strength in general, muscle is a metabolic tissue. Anytime you have more muscle tissue, it's going to increase your basal metabolic rate or how many calories you burn at rest. Therefore, having more muscle tissue or more efficient muscle tissue increases your metabolism. So don't be afraid of lifting weights or getting bulky. That goes for both guys and girls. And trust me, that shit ain't easy. I mean, if it was easy to put on muscle by accident, everybody would be huge. It doesn't work like that. You know, like they see like some of these fitness competitors or some of the women's physique girls that are bigger. It takes a long, long, long time. And for some levels of what they compete, it doesn't occur naturally. You know, so the benefits of weightlifting and training with weights for ladies, especially with bone health, you know, then the benefits are too numerous to name. It's an excellent thing, which is unfortunate that a lot of ladies get shy away from it. But circling the wagon back into protein, you know, it's perfectly fine for males, females, athletes of any age to take. It's a naturally occurring substance. It's a concentrated source of food protein.
So walk a little bit through the egg and plant-based proteins there. And even, you know what, we'll throw the soy, the plant, and the egg-based proteins in there for you.
Okay. Typically, egg and soy proteins are going to be used as alternatives to people that cannot tolerate a dairy-based protein. That's the primary use of them these days. I can't really picture, or I guess not picture, but name a protein off the top of my head that has both whey and a dairy-based and a plant protein in it. They will, however, use an animal source multi-blend, like, say, whey with some egg to have, like, a fast and medium source. But back to that, again, a lot of people use, like, if they have, like, say, a dairy allergy, they'll do, like, an egg protein. Or if somebody's looking to follow a vegan or vegetarian diet, or they just do not tolerate any form of whey for whatever reason, you know, the plant-based is an alternative. So that can be a reason to use it. But
are there any, you know, what are the cons to switching one to the plant-based versus whey or any of the other ones we already talked about?
Okay. Once again, I just need to cover this sooner rather than later so it makes sense. But one of the biggest things in terms of protein is the bioavailability and how easy it is your body to break down and utilize within the body. And also just the amino acid profiles of different types of protein. Essentially, you've heard of branched chain amino acids, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay, so BCAAs, there's three of them. There's leucine, there's isoleucine, and there's valine. All right, all of those, you can supplement BCAAs separately. They have extra great benefits to them. Leucine is the chief one. What that does is it causes an insulin response within the body. In other words, insulin is the most powerful hormone in the body. It's very anabolic. It stops muscle breakdown. It increases glycogen storage. It's, you know, shovels nutrients. Insulin is a very powerful hormone. Most people think only about diabetics and think of insulin. It's a very powerful hormone. So essentially, it causes an insulin response. It halts the breakdown of cell tissue. Isoleucine is another very important amino. Obviously, it's one of the BCAAs, and people underrate it. Isoleucine, what it does is it increases GLUT4. And essentially, it works in unison with the insulin release to make, I guess, the utilization of carbohydrates at cellular level easier in the simple way of putting that. So having, of course, the insulin response as well as sensitivity in terms of activating GLUT4, it has a nice 1-2 combo. The third is valine. And essentially, it competes in the brain at the receptors, and it prevents fatigue. It prevents mental clarity. So that's essentially what the branched chain amino acids do.
Not prevents mental clarity. It helps mental clarity, right?
Yes, yes, yes. It competes in the brain for tryptophan, okay, and typically wins. And that's why it can have benefits of course, increasing or preventing, you know, mental fatigue. So essentially, when you think of whey protein, the biggest part of that is the dose of leucine predominantly. Like all these BCAAs occur in protein. 3 grams is essentially the number that's agreed upon in research to initiate protein synthesis or have the insulin or spike. So anytime you ingest a protein, that's where the main benefits is coming from. It initiates that proteosynthesis. You know, it has a high level of leucine. So whey protein is going to have a high levels of leucine in it. And that's what's going to, of course, get the protein spike. Then your body utilizes all the amino acids and breaks them down. And, of course, you know, starts a muscle building process. So the reason we covered that is when you get into, there's actually a couple studies I've scanned them briefly. I've been sitting on my desk and I just haven't glanced at them for a while. Is a big plant protein is a soy. A lot of times people, you know, choose that as their alternative. It doesn't have the same effect on protein synthesis from an insulin spike compared to a whey protein source. It was actually a little bit underwhelming in terms of that, in terms of bioavailability, and of course, in terms of the response.
Hey man, I'm catching up to your words and writing them, man. So, I mean, that's the factual research basically that's out there. Is that opinion subjective? What's the research look like behind that? Are these more than like one study in seven people?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few studies on it, and this is one of those highly controversial ones in terms of soy protein, just because there'll be advocates for it saying, oh, it causes the estrogen, the estrogenic effects, it's the phytoestrogen. Those are people saying, disproving it, that it's only at certain levels. Then there's people saying it doesn't exist because it only happens to certain individuals because everybody processes things differently. Then there'll be people on the camp against it because it's not as bioavailable. You know, it all depends on exactly what you're looking to do. From myself, from what I've seen from it, I don't like it.
Now, are plant-based proteins and soy-based, even egg, are these slower absorption?
Yes, compared to whey protein, they'll be slower absorbed.
Now, someone may want to use that then if, say, they were going to sleep 8-9 hours overnight and still needed like a slow absorption protein. That would be something maybe to take before bed.
Yeah, it'd be perfectly fine. In all honesty, the whole casein before bed is way overstated. In terms of how long it takes your body to start catabolizing tissue if you have a balanced diet.
I'm just assuming here. So what do you say? Yeah. What do you think?
I personally, of course, every bodybuilder in the day when if you're younger is taking casein before bed, you know, like, oh man, I don't go in and go catabolic overnight. But realistically, it's just unnecessary. It's a nice little source of protein before bed. I mean, hell, right now, typically in contest or even pre-contest, depending on what time of year it is right now, my last meal is steak, you know, steak and asparagus, a whole food protein source. It's, I guess I'll branch into that next, but, you know, it's a slower digesting protein source. It's a whole food source. It has fat in it. It's usually top sirloin. So it's not crazy high in fat, but anytime you add fat or fiber, into a food source, it slows digestion, which is not a bad thing, you know. So that's why sometimes you eat like a really heavy, fatty meal, it can feel like it sits in your stomach. It just takes your body a little bit longer to break down sometimes, especially with fiber, because, you know, it's just literally fibrous material that your body has to break through. So that's why it increases satiety.
Yeah, I love it, man. Those are good sum ups, man, because, you know, we could walk down those roads of research of soy and plant-based. And really, I mean, aren't we finding that nutrition, excuse me, I've been coughing a lot. I got that CBD oil, or no, CBD oil. It looks like I'm giving myself away. I wish it was CBD. The MCT oil in the thing. What's my throat? But, you know, rather than walk down the whole plant-based versus whey protein, it's starting to look a little more individualized, right? As people are doing more research, I see people are beginning to start with genetic bases even, doing blood testing to really even match the nutrition more, you know, custom to the individual.
Yeah, absolutely. Very briefly on this, this is one thing that haven't had the time to delve into deeply. Interesting talking about one of my friends with it, who's a phenomenal prep coach as well, is there actually theory out there that typically people respond best to their heritage. Like if you're Mediterranean, typically, like for example, like I'm Greek. So in theory, a traditional Mediterranean or Greek style diet, a diet that's typically higher in like fats, like especially like, you know, fatty fish, olive, things like that, and meats would respond better to that than say having a really heavy starch based diet. You know, so that's very interesting. Once again, there's some decent things out there in terms of studies on it, but, you know, I have to
look a little bit more. Who's the set of that kind of theory, man? Who's talking about that one, you know?
It's not really on the radar right now. It's a huge thing. It's just kind of, you know, one of the things you happen to come across, you find it very interesting. And I'm like, wow, if this holds true, this could be very big. But hell, I mean, it could be just like paleo, where all of a sudden everybody gets behind it, has this huge momentum, and now, like, nobody talks about it all because it kind of fell off the wagon.
Yeah, but it starts to seem practical, you know. But you got to, I guess, be able to break up how much of your heritage is really what percentage,
much
the current exterior environment has actually changed that. Because with epigenetics, we're actually beginning to find out that, you know, the exterior environment may be manifesting the genetic internal environment. So, I mean, there's a lot to be learned, but man. You know, I talked to a guy, I want to say his name was Trey Kidd at Europa, and they're doing some documentary or study about him and trying to make it in 11 weeks to go pro, basing it all on genetics.
Yeah. You know, that's a very interesting thing. You know, some people may genetically hear about people whose parents, like her dad is a legendary football player and their son turns out to be a very gifted athlete as well. You know, so that can play, you know, some role in it. But at the same time, you know, genetics are a huge part of it when it comes down to the bodybuilding, athletics, things like that. I know you mentioned, once again, I'm not a, you know, genomist by any means, shape, or form in terms of genes or genetic study. That's a whole other thing that mad props will to study that.
Yeah, I'm not an epigeneticist either. I'm not a biologist. So, yeah, don't get me twisted. You know, I mean, for further information on those titles, look up Dr. Rhonda Patrick at Found My Fitness and Aubrey DeGray as well. Those are the two that I know that are specialists in those areas if you want to go deeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly, I know you mentioned genetic testing. One of the can't disclose who it is. It's like a local practice here in Florida. My GP, actually, of all people. So you came in and like the first time I met with her, it's kind of covering a health history thing, like what surgery he had, so on and so forth. And basically covering surgeries, I broke a bone in my wrist when I was a senior in high school and wrestling in December. And I wrestled for 2.5 months with a broken bone.
Hey, we talked about that yesterday, remember?
Yeah. So I had a broken bone. And, you know, she's like, it didn't hurt? I'm like, well, you know, adrenaline gets going. And he thinks a sprained wrist in the wrestling season. Like, oh, it'll heal after wrestling. Lo and behold, it's a broken bone. So then she kind of breathed off and the medications like that. And she said, okay, you'd be an interesting candidate into doing a current study she's doing. They did the testing there, you know, it's basically the DNA tissue swab. What they're studying is how different gene types react to pharmaceuticals and pain tolerance. So interestingly, like, you know, she asked me like, oh, like, you know, she kept asking questions about them. Like, there's like, 9 years ago now. And it's like, oh, well, it's just very fascinating. You know, like you had the high pain tolerance and then you said, you know, when you like for post-surgery, it was oxycodone or hydrocodone, depending which surgery it was. And I fucking hated it. I'm like, it felt miserable. It's like, oh, okay. Interestingly. So basically she's studying how different gene types in this broad study she's doing metabolize pharmaceuticals, in this case, prescription narcotics. And the same deal, very interesting. Different people metabolize caffeine stimulants differently. Different, you know, some people can take caffeine, like,
keep going through a genetic study like that. That's interesting. I wonder how that may play into, addiction research later in the future.
Yes, absolutely. You know, different, predispositions, like I'm once again, brushing the surface here. This is your forte, genetic predispositions to alcoholism. Oh.
I'm not a geneticist at all. We can talk about addiction for sure.
More so psychology. That's what I was saying. You know, you're very well good in that aspect compared to myself. I'm very humble in that aspect. That's not my area of expertise. I've studied a bit of it, but not to your extent.
For me, I get a lot of pushback because I actually call this field an art form, not a science. And there is a science to it. But when you apply it in like therapy, there's an art to it, man, for sure.
There is. It's the same deal with a reliable example here. It is definitely an art. You know, you may know everything in the world about, say, personal training or strength and conditioning, but if you don't know how to apply it to clients in the real world, it's a personality. Nobody wants to be personal trained by a fucking textbook. So it's definitely an art in how you individual personality ties into that knowledge and how they convey it. You can know all this information that I know, but if you can't convey it simply to the common audience, then it's all for naught. And it's like I said yesterday, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough.
Yeah, I do. I think I even argued that if you can't argue both sides, you're not fully competent, that you're actually naive if you can only defend one side.
Correct. I agree with that 100%. You know, there's many topics that can go either way. And that's why I'm saying, well, it depends. Like, oh, is this good or bad? I'm like, well, it all depends. Like, what do you mean depends? I'm like, well, how about this or this or this? In that case, yes. Or over here. You know, if you have an allergy to everything in the world except for soy protein, by God means, take soy protein, as you have to. In that case, you know, there's always exceptions to, you know, everything.
Yeah, and well, that's part of the culture we talked about too yesterday, right? Give me the one answer that fits everything I need and make sure it's easy enough for me not to have to change anything.
Exactly. If people want a black or white answer, but oftentimes many are left in gray.
Mm, yeah, it's spoken like a poet, man. Look at that. The vanilla gorilla speaks, man. So walk us, we're covering the BCAAs here, some differences in those proteins. I love that information, man. I got a lot of stuff to keep following up on, man. So did we finish there? Did I squirrel us?
No, we got through it. I essentially explained, you know, the types, how protein works, why BCAAs are important, and basic bioavailable, things like that. So I'd say we have a pretty thorough, you know, explanation there.
Yeah, man. Excuse myself too, man, if I'm a little formatted this time. I just feel like there's a wealth and a well of information here. So I'm trying to keep myself online and learn something else too directly. But let's see. Yeah, stimulants, man. That's we covered a little bit for the ESPN show, Aaron, on May 29th. But for now, I mean, start me off with some stuff, man. Educate me. What should and we shouldn't do? I mean, is coffee good? Is coffee bad? Are energy drinks good? What's in this stuff? And why does it sometimes kill people? What's going on?
I know we covered briefly yesterday, as well as an ESPN show, basically kind of the interesting thing with a lot of the stimulants are getting like popped these days by the FDA and supplements, how they're specifically old supplements, well, actually not even supplements, old compounds that were discovered back in the 30s and 40s as the result of everybody wanting to keep up with ephedra. And then they kind of got pushed off the table. Now they're kind of like, hey, we got this in the old cookbook. Let's bring it back. But the thing about stimulants these days is this is a very stimulated world we live in, whether it be the pre-workouts we all take, the coffee craze, there's a Starbucks every block. You're talking about insane amounts of energy drinks. There's stimulants everywhere. There's stimulants in everything. I mean, for God's sake, there's like fat burning, quote unquote, or metabolic protein. They put like thermogenic and caffeine in your protein. There is even branched amino acids, like them, like Optum's Amino Energy, or those other similar products like that. There's caffeine in everything. You know, you're gonna get your stimulants from somewhere. It's in pre-workouts and fat burners.
Is this just shut down a heart? I mean, are we just running jet fuel through like a Toyota Prius here? Like, I mean,
not necessarily. The caffeine is generally regarded as a very, very safe ingredient. It's been around forever. It's naturally occurring.
You know what the LD50 is on caffeine, or is there one?
The upper day limit. I mean, it all depends on the individual. Typically, I think the highest, like I've seen, the single supplement.
The LD50 I'm referring to is the lethal dose, right? That the lethal dose at half life. Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know. That's off my head. I've never pushed that limit or looked into it. But then again,
We could search it. I was just interested.
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually, on a funny side note, I know that I think it's still out there. There's a site you can look up if you have to Google it. It's like, how many of this energy drink can you drink before you die or whatever? Oh, wow. I kid you not. It's like, you know, like drink, you type in like, say, like Monster, drink at this body weight, drink this many cans of Monster in your worm food. And it's just this hilarious site.
You know? Man, there's crazy. I saw a couple. Here it goes. It says the LD50 of caffeine is a 127
milligrams. 127
milligrams? Yeah.
There has to be more to it than that.
Hello? Yeah, I got to talk so you can see it up on the screen there. See? 127 LD50.
Oh, that's a key. 127 milligrams per kilogram.
Okay. There we go. Sorry, I screwed you up.
Yeah. Oh, it's all good. That's all good. I was like, I'm assuming it's per body weight.
Walk me through it. Like I said, I'm not the math guy. I get it. It's per body weight, but walk me through it anyway.
So,
like,
for example, okay, how much do you weigh roughly in pounds?
175.
Okay, 175. In kilograms, there's 2.246 pounds per kilogram. So 175 divided by 2.246, you're roughly 77.9 kilograms. So you're lethal daily dose of caffeine would be 9,895 milligrams, if I'm not mistaken.
Basically.
So let's crunch that number. 77.9 times 127. Yeah, 9,893. So you would have to take an insane amount of caffeine to like die. Well, you're talking basically like a pre-workout that has you know, 400 milligrams, you know, you'd be talking about taking 245 scoops of it.
You know, holy shit. So to get 9,000, to hit that, I would do 45 scoops of, say, like Jack 3D or something crazy.
Yeah. The thing is, like, you'd have to go out of your typically, like, drinks, Pitbull, I don't really think you'd have an issue. If you start taking, like, pure caffeine powder, or people start taking, like strip caffeine pills, you know, it's like a gram per pill, and multiple times on top of other things, you know, you'd have to be pretty, you know, you'd have to go out of your way or fuck up pretty bad to hit that number. That's not saying that you should go anywhere near that. You know, just because you can doesn't mean there'd be any benefit, and it would not be fun. Like, even typically an upper dose of caffeine per day. I don't really think on purpose I've ever fucked with anything near a gram, just because you feel like anxiety. All the other side effects would make you stop before you probably even got close to that.
Everybody all right over there, man?
I know. My cat's chilling, looking out the window at the thunder and the rain, but, you know.
I mean, that's nuts, because you do hear a lot of stories. I saw a couple things on the internet, some boys playing basketball, drinking a Monster, and just dropped dead. But how much of this is really playing to a predisposition for a heart condition, typically?
You know, all those things do take effect. It also depends what else is in our system. It can depend on, you know, different stress. Because any time that you take, for example, this is pre-workouts, like, a lot of people like the high stim pre's. I've honestly, you know, I admittedly used to do it myself. I've gotten away from them. Because think of this on leg day. Anything, if you're already increasing your heart rate to a certain extent, on top of doing very heavy physical activity, like your heart rate's already hitting the fucking ceiling, you know, and as you get winded, you get out of breath, you know, your heart rate's just like too much. So it can be counterintuitive to performance to have really crazy amounts of stimulants in your system.
Yeah, I stopped pre-workouts a long time ago, man. I got a sensitive heart. And sometimes I'd be working out, and I work out hard, and I'd have to sit down. You know, I'm like, this is too much. And I would always, just for safety reasons, if it was ever pre-workout, I always took half of what they recommended to take, just to try it out. And even those little half doses like that would, you know, put me in chest pumping. It was just too much, man.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of stims go a long way. Typically a sweet spot for me, caffeine is like 300 at the most. I don't need more than that. But then again, I like taking other things with it, like whether it be a little bit of Alpha MB, or when you could have it in there, Picotropin.
Talk to me. Why would you take those with that? What's the additionals here?
Complementary effects. Alpha MB or Rahusline is a great ingredient. It has nice thermic properties to it. So you sweat a little bit. It helps as a vasodilator. It's just a great overall.
Can you spell that for me, man?
Yohimbe?
Yeah, I can't quite make out what you're saying.
Yeah. Yohimbe. Yohimbe.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's different various effects. You know, it helps with mental clarity. It's a vasodilator, and it helps you perform better. I like how I feel when I take it. Some people don't respond well to Yohimbe. That's actually one of the iffy ingredients these days. It's generally regarded as safe. Most people are perfectly fine with it. You know, good gauge of something is like.
I get to use some knowledge I learned. This would be considered grass status.
Oh yeah, very, very much so. Some like there are certain countries that won't touch it because you can't have Yohimbe in it, like international. Then some countries don't care, but a lot of them like no, we banned Yohimbe over here for whatever reason. That is a natural extract.
So it would not then have to go in as like what an NDI then?
Correct. Yeah. It's just a natural.
But you see what you taught me, man, in one day sitting with you, man. See, I'm learning the basics of the lingo here. See, part I think of being in any field is you got to know all the acronyms.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just a good ingredient, you know. So I like to compliment this as like straight up caffeine. Okay, you know, it gets a little bit wired up, but then like, you know, other things to help kind of, you know, smooth it out.
What else do you add with the Yohimbe and caffeine? You said you had one or two more, I think.
When you get back in a couple, probably you're open, just a nice focus agent. Once again, it's just you have to help it synthesized. One of them is really big these days, which is actually a very interesting ingredient. Is tea cream. And what that is, it's a extract from Chinese tea leaves. It's a stimulant, and it has non-adaptive properties to it. In other words, with caffeine, essentially you keep hitting that same amount of caffeine, your body adapts to it, it gets a tolerance to it. So therefore you have to cycle off it, you know, kind of let your body chill, get not used to it again, or you have to increase the dose to get, you know, that same effect. Chicrine is a stimulant that doesn't exhibit those properties. It hits as hard the first time as it will the 30th time. You know, so it's a very interesting thing. It kind of pairs nicely with caffeine. I don't feel a huge rush just from tea cream itself. However, it's a nice sustained level energy. So the caffeine that kind of hits a little bit quicker, the tea cream kind of carries it over. So it's a nice, brings you up, keeps you level, and gradually brings you down. And of course, it hits as hard too. So it may not get as much hit from the caffeine, but you're still going to feel the tea cream.
Okay, is that what you're saying, theacrine? I can't quite make out what you're saying. Tea green, theagreen. I heard the tea extract, but...
Well, there's different trademark names for it. So basically, teacrine. T-E-A-C-R-I-N-E. Teacrine.
All right.
Theacrine.
Yeah, if you were sitting in the cave, man, it would come out a little bit better. But, yeah, so that's kind of your pre-workout that you like to stick with about 300 milligrams of caffeine, too.
Yeah, about 300 milligrams of caffeine, and just depending on what I'm feeling like that day. But, you know, keep it simple. But back to the, you know, what we're getting at with the amount of stimulants, is like, you know, if you're taking, goddamn, you see people taking a pre-workout. They also will take a fat burner. I mean, God, like you're taking a pre, 300 milligrams of caffeine, taking a full serving of just, you know, the thermogenic, you're probably looking at another 150, 300 milligrams of caffeine from the thermo, that's over half a gram of caffeine just from two things. You know, if they drink coffee with their boys or, you know, lady taking some coffee, you know, they're adding in another 80 to 100 milligrams a cup, depending on how strong it's brewed, or 700. You have a second cup of coffee later in the afternoon. You know, if you're used to it, you're, you know, 700-800 milligrams of caffeine, it adds up.
Yeah, it definitely does. I get to lower my coffee intake by using the MCT oil. That slows you down a little bit, keeps the energy going too, because too much of that MCT and I'm running to the bathroom.
Yeah, MCTs, they can have a bit of a laxative effect if you overdo it. But the other thing too, interestingly, if you is in a keto, which essentially where you're putting your body in ketosis, like you're not ingesting carbohydrates, you're not having a insulin response, it's a ketogenic cutting diet. You can always look that up if you want to know more about that.
I've run something similar to like a 5-2 thingy type deal, but it's not by the books. I do it kind of by feeling. It's a mix of kind of like the primal thing, but I may even fast a day or twice a week if I feel like it. It depends on how much I ate the next day, but I never really have a cheat day. I kind of eat when I'm hungry. I graze. It's weird, man. That's how, dude, I was 245 back last year, November. And then from November to, I think, middle of January, I went from 245 to 185.
Dang. Good work.
Yeah, just all I, and I'd stop. I only worked out once or twice a week. All I did was just switch how I ate, what I ate, went organic as clean as I could. I mean, obviously it's difficult to do, and it was crazy, man. Back pains went away. It was nuts being a lifelong football player to the, you know, for a while, and weightlifter. A lot of things hurt when you're 34, 35. So, you know, I switched to that, and it's amazing all the things that went away quick in those days, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, what's comfortable for your body, what you're currently doing, and, you know, just keeping a long-term maintenance to yourself.
Yeah, it works, you know, and then you look around, too, and you're like, I don't see too many 75, 80-year-old jack dudes. I mean, they're around, sure, but given the size of the population, And I was kind of like, you know, I bashed my head playing football for a long time and God knows what in the nightclub business, doing what else. And I'm like, I don't have much on the back end either. So I'm going to at least try to drop some of this linebacker padding I don't need anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you've always been a pretty big dude since we were talking playing football. How many calories are you taking in a day, man?
Right now, about 5,000. I'm an off season, pushing up to hopefully most of it probably going to happen within the next week or so before I start contest prep. Sitting about 256 and a half this morning before we start trebbing it down. Light for heavyweight, I got to weigh in at 225 and a quarter in October 22nd for the show I'm doing. But, you know, typically heavyweights in the off season, they weigh that much.
When you start training for that, man, when you generally, how long's your training camp, if you will, if it's in October?
It's training year round. Like I really never have like a time off. It's essentially off season. You're in a calorie surplus or following contests, you're in off season, but you follow a reverse diet. In other words, you gradually increase your calories very carefully so you don't have a rebound effect in terms of your metabolism. And the thing is, after a show, your body is very primed and in a good state to grow. It's ready to rebuild itself. It's ready to be de-stressed. So it's a very anabolic time. So if you do it correctly and you gradually increase, you know, your calories, and you'll put on a hell of a lot of lean tissue and stay lean. Your body's hypersensitive to insulin and nutrients. But if you go out the gate after a show and I'm going to eat whatever the hell I want, you'll put on a ton of fat with it too, because your body will store everything. So that's why you see a lot of people come out of a show and they'll rebound bad. One is that you'll feel miserable, they'll look miserable, and you know, you wasted all this time to use this key time of growth.
You see that with MMA fighters, actually, man. That's a similar thing with bodybuilders I'm hearing then. So right after a show, right after a fight, they've been training so hard that a lot of them just kind of go, all right, I don't want to do anything anymore, and they'll eat whatever, kind of even slow down on some training, relax. And you see them puff up pretty quickly, too. But
yeah.
They drop it quick, too, though. Their muscle memory is ridiculous.
That's very true. I mean, you need to take your body some time to rest after a show. I mean, you're putting your body through hell. Typically, I know your question is how long. So essentially, I'm 22 weeks out as of today, to be October 22nd. I'm probably going to do probably 19, 20-week cut. So I have a couple weeks of off-season left here. And then gradually cut it down. The longer you take, you know, within reason, you'll typically maintain more lean muscle. You're not having to cut calories as hard. You're not having to do as much cardio. And you gradually, slowly do it to, you know, maintain as much muscle as you can. So name the game. Keep as much muscle as you can while getting as lean as you can in bodybuilding.
All right. So I'm going to throw this out there. Where do you stand with the whole gluten idea?
It's interesting. Obviously, there's those you can't have with celiac disease. There's those people that think have gluten sensitivity. I actually experimented myself for a good year and a half of just doing things aside from eating gluten. I wouldn't go out of my way to make sure, oh my gosh, I can't use a soy sauce. It's not gluten-free. Like, I wouldn't go to that extent, but I really didn't eat wheats. Like, I didn't eat breads. I didn't eat pasta. Or, you know, muffins, things like that had like wheat in them or cookies. I mean, I don't eat that much stuff anyway. But in terms, I just did all like other carb sources, you know, a whole lot of sweet potatoes was my main one, oatmeal, you know, gluten-free oats, things like that, and just, and a hell of a lot of white rice. And still to this day, I have some in my diet, you know, just for the carb source to keep my carbs mixed in there. But the, you know, it's interesting. Some people do get a little inflammation in terms of having wheat in their diet. Everybody, once again, metabolizes it differently. So there's people that simply cannot have it, celiac disease. And then there's some people, like, it is experiment. One thing is you notice it a little bit more when you haven't had it, and then you try it and see how your body reacts to it. But everybody has a different level of how they react. Me, I don't notice a huge difference. In terms of it, I digest things a little differently. Like this, once again, there's other factors, you know. It could be how I digest it, or it could be like, okay, if you're not eating this, what are you using instead? You're eating, say, more sweet potatoes or oats or high-fiber foods. You know, you may feel different digestively.
But yeah, that's kind of where I was going to go next, is to the fibers. And Dr. Rhonda Patrick, again, at Found My Fitness, is the deep expert here. But she talks about multiple fiber sources, different kinds of fiber. And where does that play in for you personally? How should people that are maybe walking into nutrition, bodybuilding, look at fiber in their diet?
You know, it's essential for digestion. And typically for eating nice whole foods, like whether it be your greens, like asparagus, spinach, kale, or your carbohydrate sources, nice whole food carbohydrate sources like sweet potatoes or, you know, oatmeal. Or if you're having your fruits in your diet, you know, all those things are contain naturally occurring fiber. So if you're eating just whole foods, you know, it's easier to get your fiber in than most people think. If you're eating a heavily processed food diet, on the other hand, then, you know, it's more problematic. Interestingly, I'm going to shift gears on you here because it's a pretty interesting one. You're probably finding it's entertaining. Is one of the, you know, most highly touted things. People ask me, oh, what do you eat? And they're like, oh, so I'm so da 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 da. Yeah, a lot of white rice, like white rice. Everybody's surprised that I say white rice instead of brown, because everybody has it pounded in their head that brown rice is king. Right. That's not the case. In all honesty, white rice is way better than brown rice will ever be. The main reasons that brown rice. I'll ask you this. Why is brown rice considered good? What have you heard?
I don't consider it better. I keep my jasmine rice in there, which is probably a little bit worse. But yeah, never really bought into it.
Yeah, not at all. I use jasmine myself. Essentially, brown rice, I think jasmine tastes amazing too. That's one benefit. Is that with brown rice, it's one, people say, oh, it has higher fiber, lower glycemic index, more nutrients, so on and so forth. It's less processed. Okay. Well, actually, it's counterintuitive, as in the 1 or 2 grams of fiber, most times one, depending on the hybrid of rice, gram of fiber is a negligible difference. So, okay, the fiber argument's out the window. Secondly, the glycemic index isn't all that much lower than white rice, especially anytime you consider glycemic index, which is very, very overstated to begin with. Anytime you're ingesting a carb source with a protein or a fat, it's going to lower that anyway. So once again, that's so many pieces there that can be moved and also kind of throws that out the window. But the biggest one is that the fiber itself, the bran of the rice that they're leaving attached in brown rice, contains a chemical called phytic acid. Phytic acid can cause inflammation or irritation of the digestive system. It's also an anti-nutrient, so it can actually be counterintuitive, as it can interfere with absorption of nutrients. So this whole thing of it being touted as better because of the fiber is actually detrimental. You know, the white rice is easy to digest. It's very hypoallergenic. You know, people is generally regarded as very easy digesting. Like a lot of people would have gluten allergies for alternatives, like cream of rice rather than cream of wheat is processed ground white rice. You know, it's very easy to digest regardless of the person. It's very hard to find people with rice allergies, you know, especially with a white rice that's been processed. It's a great pure source for athletes. It's pure glucose. You know, it's easy to break down. It's a good fuel source. That's why bodybuilders love it. It's a great source of carbs. You can eat it. It isn't as filling as other things like sweet potatoes if you're trying to get your carbs in, you know. So jasmine rice or basmati, whatever it may be, you know, it's where it's at.
Yeah, one of my my fruit secrets for fiber is pears. Is I have a couple good organic pears laying around too.
Yeah, I don't do much fruit at all these days. I know, blasphemy. Just because of
sugar content. No, man. The Primal Blueprint speaks to that too, man. Way less fruit. He's talking only 12 to 24 type grams of carbs intake anyway, or sugar a day. So, I mean, yeah. Fruit itself is limited. And you know what I like his story about why fruit would be limited is he refers his diet back to where we just wandered and walked. We didn't grow our own food, right? So he looks at life as if we were just walking around in nature. And it wouldn't be every day that you would walk up on fruit, and much less in abundance. And so he works it into his diet plan, if you will, the Primal Blueprint, like that, is treat fruit as that specialty that you have once in a while, you know, that thing you come across randomly.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, like, if I do choose to have fruit, my favorite fruit would happen to be berries, which are actually, to me, like the best one. They have typically the lowest sugar content and the highest fiber, like blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, you know. So if I do choose to have some fruit, I love the taste of them. They're delicious. That probably pears or apples.
Blueberry guy all day.
So, you know what's that. But once again, I eat little to no fruit mainly because of, you know, just the sugar content.
Personal preference. Sugar just came out like that, right? I heard, is it true that sugar, natural sugar basically is just as worse or not better than high fructose corn syrup?
Yeah. That's the interesting thing. Like there's this huge debate right now in terms of high fructose corn syrup being better for you or worse for you than sugar.
They're both just shitty.
They're both, yeah, it's just sugar, you know, that's the point. I mean, you have a more chemically processed version of it. Like, the main thing is that the long time has been that high fructose corn syrup is more easily stored as body fat and more of a food product rather than actual food. And how about this? Just don't eat fucking sugar. Naturally occurring, sure, like sweet potatoes have sugar in them. Fruits can have sugar in them. But if you're drinking fruit juice or eating snack cakes or candy and shit like that, then okay, yeah, you have to. Yeah, it's sugar regardless. The biggest joke I gave somebody, I can't remember who, I was in college. Nutrition class, this girl came in, she's all like organic this, organic that. And I'm like, you're missing the point. Like you eat, okay, it's great. I mean, you know, just because you have organic sugar, it just makes you an organically fat hippie. Okay. You know, so.
Yeah. It's the organic word even is starting to get butchered up, because I think in some states, or maybe wider, that organic really only needs to produce what 70% of its processing has to be organic to get that label.
I believe so. I know it's some, you know, very misleading statistic in terms of what's on there, but it's translating that, you know, making organic a fat hippie. I mean, okay, that, like you say, oh, 100% natural. It's like some.
Well, like, you know what? That leads me to a question, man, because, you know, I have a personal question. When, you know, I use the plant-based protein only because we talked about that yesterday. Lactose can bother me sometimes, you know, but anyway, anywhere from hemp to something else. So I'm not going to name the side brand I use once in a while. I like the flavor, I like the taste, and it's up there. Bodybuilding.com offers it and all, and it ranks up there. But when I look at something and it says, you know, 2 cups of kale, 3 whatever cups of broccoli, I mean, exactly how are those powdered plants? Is it just that organic? I mean, if it's saying that, are they just grounding it up essentially and making it? Is there a chemical process added to making these plants, cup of kale, cup of all this in there?
Essentially, there's drying it and grinding it, you know, turning into a powder form and blending it in. You know, so it's natural. It's fine if you choose to drink it in a powder. So it's like basically a dehydrated version of juicing.
I'm just double checking, man, because sometimes,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, you think about it. And that leads me to kind of another topic, man. Micronutrients, man. Walk us through this hazy world.
Well, there's a lot of things interesting these days. Essentially, if you're eating a balanced diet, you know, getting all your green veggies in, you know, your meats, natural food sources, give them the processed crap, you know, it's pretty hard to mess that up. Like if you're eating only processed things, you only eat certain foods, you're boxing yourself in, then maybe, yeah, you may see a little more issue with that, you know. But I guess the thing to keep this as short as possible, even though we have plenty of time, is just because, you know, it's a very broad subject. The most refreshed one is, interestingly, that there's been studies saying multivitamins don't work. Like there's no solid conclusive evidence that taking a multivitamin improves long-term health. You know, it's everybody thinks of multivitamins this kind of like a nutritional insurance to make sure you're covering all your bases. However, you know, yes or no, do I need a multivitamin? Is it essential to staying healthy, long-term health, so on and so forth? You know, it's inconclusive. There's nothing stating that you have to take a multi or that taking a multivitamin provides X benefits. So it's kind of interesting after all this time, you're pounding your head, even the kids, with Flintstones vitamins.
That's what, dude, how did that happen? You were just in my head because I was like, the Flintstones made a killing off me, man, because I used to eat them things like sweet tarts.
Yeah, absolutely. Who didn't, you know? Like I see a benefit for it. Once again, this is just from my perspective of, for say, making sure your kids, if they're very picky eaters or they won't eat certain foods, then maybe like a scoop of multi just because, like, to make sure they're getting all for development.
I'm sorry, but look, you're trying to be nice. But listen, parents, grown parent person, if the child in front of you and you say to me, never in my life, but she just won't eat it. He just won't eat it. Listen, the kid will be hungry. And when you put it there, eat it. And whether the kid does or doesn't, find a way to make it to where the kid could like it. Don't be too lazy either. And so I don't like letting parents off the hook of by telling me their 4-year-old just won't eat it, or their 6-year-old, and then, well, you buy all the other stuff too. So the child learns, I don't have to eat it because eventually you'll just buy the crap anyway. Sorry. I ranted.
Well, the point of the podcast, you get a few emails of that, but here's the key going to that. You exactly get the nail on the head.
Dude, you know what I say on this podcast? I get a lot of heat for this one. Since I went that far, I'm going to go ahead and go this far. I say that if your child is morbidly obese, that is child abuse.
I agree. It's 100%. You control what your fucking kid eats. You know, here's the point. I'll be a fucking parent. If they don't eat it, well, okay, I guess you're not getting this. Don't, you know, I understand. Once again, I get it. I don't have kids. I mean, I have a
psychological damage. They set it up for them. The psychological damage. I even talk about it even in the book here, The Rampage. That psychological damage you should know you set them up for. But really question yourself as a parent if you go, what other earthly responsibility do I have to teach my child other than here's what you eat so you live longer, here's what you do so you don't suffer?
No, exactly. And it was a thing, as I know, for once again, this would be something that has to be studied. But a quick joke is, you know, people talk about their kids. I'm like, oh, how about you? You have any kids? I'm like, yeah, I have a seventh month old at home. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. And my girl name's Chica. And they, what the fuck?
Yeah, you're one of those. You're the cat kid person.
The cat kid. You know, what's more funny than anything? She's spoiled rotten. You know, she hangs out, she chills. But hell, even she eats like the Blue Buffalo natural cat food.
Hey, you're seeing that. What did I see the other day they're doing for dogs? I saw a pet therapist.
That could be. I mean, they have anything and everything, but then again, it's just a balance that has, you know, it's like real meat and stuff. I'm like, there you go, cat. Enjoy.
Yeah, I'm with you, dude. I'm one of the ones that feeds my dog from the table. I don't care. I'm not that guy. Look, here's a theory behind it, too. Anytime my friends or whatever come over, Roxy, she doesn't play. She's all up on you if you got food. But the way I see it is they changed their entire genetic makeup from wolves to these little dogs. Now, we did a lot of messing around in between there. But back in the day, they decided to change their entire being for us. How dare I not give them some food instead of this lame stuff they got to eat every day in a boring, 9 to 14-year life? You know, in between there, give or takes. And yeah, I'm going to give her the good portion of my meat or something after I'm done eating, man, right from the table too. And she's not going to have to sit and spin and talk and do all this human shit to get it.
Exactly. You know, I mean, grew up on a farm, we give our dogs table scraps and like, oh, it's so bad for your dog. My dog was a yellow lab that lived to be 15 years old. I think he did all right.
That's right, man. Instead, they kick him and they shove him, get down, and they yell at him. And I'm like, you know what, dude? The dog's got a shit life. Because it's with you. And two, you keep giving it bull crap. You know, you're giving your dog cancer. Man, how did we get here, Drew?
Talking about how piece of shit parents that have obese kids are abusing their child.
That's right. And look, I'll pull up a little bit just to say, look, parents, if you're going through it too and struggling, look, the body to me is a reflection of the mind. And so we can't bestow those same stressors that you have on your life on your children. So if you're going through something, please find help. You know, a lot of times working on the mental first will help you then allow to work on the physical, you know, and vice versa. It can work both ways for people. Please, you know, find the help, man, because it's a long suicide doing it like that, you know?
Exactly. You know, it's a start from the ground up. We'll play nice. It's true. I get it. You know, there's genetic predisposition to things, you know, and it's tough to be a parent sometimes. Everybody wants to be their kid's friend. But, you know, be a parent too. You know, treat habits.
Just let them learn. Give them the education because they want to know too. Don't force it. Don't say like, hey, here's a research that says or whatever. Hand them research. Let them learn. Because, you know, I kind of present some things. A lot of time, Morgan sets me straight. She's like, that's not true. You know, she knows. Then this generation is informed like yours. I mean, you're 10 years my younger, man. And the information that you're, it's full. So, I mean, let's assume that somebody's not eating a full balanced diet, right? And is this where micronutrients come in? I mean, are there supplements for micronutrients? I'm seeing a lot of new protein blends and things coming out now with this micronutrients. Or is this another trend thing that you talk about?
I'd say it's another trend. I mean, all of a sudden, oh, we need to put micronutrient protein. It's another selling point. Essentially what it is, you know, it's just overstated. And keeping that very to the point, you know, it's overstated.
Yeah, it is. Cause it is then. So you see it coming to different levels. You see it coming everywhere from krill oil to certain mushroom things. You see all kinds of certain additives being put into, you know, these micronutrients essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just overstating. In terms of micronutrients, yeah, it's overstated, but you know, for certain things, like, you know, I don't know why you'd put it in a protein, but you said like krill oil, like if you're supplementing some things like fortifying them, adding in like omega-3s, which are, you know, for most people tougher to get in their diet, then yeah, by all means, you know, like I do encourage people to take like an omega-3 supplement, like whether it be fish oil or krill oil, something like that, because it's an excellent anti-inflammatory source of fat that you may not necessarily get, you know, some of the best sources, you know, these things like salmon or avocado or olives, you know, it's just, you know, tougher to, you know, get through your diet without adding the fats all the way up.
What's one of the biggest things that you hear a lot that you just scream at your phone or Facebook or wall or Instagram to where you just, this is bullshit. What's something that pops up that you just want to scream at all the time?
I'm sure like, I don't have anything on the top of my head right now. There's certain shit that the thing that probably annoys me the most is when it comes down to the black and white issue of like, oh, this is healthy. It must be healthy just because like of X. Like the longest time people like, oh, it's fat free. It's healthy. And they're fucking pounding a bag of Twizzlers. Or, oh, it's this is gluten. The big one is this gluten free. Like gluten free doesn't mean healthy. You know, not this isn't picking on gluten. Just in general, there's a wave of gluten free. And you see like ready take and bake cookies, gluten free. And it still have 10 grams of sugar, 7 grams of fat. And per cookie, it's a fucking cookie. Just because it's gluten free doesn't mean it's the magical bullet you can eat as much as you want of. You know, that's the thing. Or, oh, it's a dairy-free ice cream and says with coconut milk. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah.
Well, then it's not fucking ice cream.
Yeah, it's like coconut cream, you know. But it's, well, iced coconut cream. There we go. Meet in the middle. But coconut is a fantastic fat source, but it's high in fat. So, okay, you're replacing regular probably skim milk with whole coconut milk. Same sugar. It's still fucking ice cream. It doesn't make it healthier. It's ice cream, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if you could, to stay similar around the same topic, could you, you know, pull back the veil on maybe, let's say there's someone that just doesn't know about nutrition, right? And they're kind of going, you know, where do I start? What do I do? Kind of pull back the veil on something that may be one of those first barriers that they're going to, those fake barriers of bullshit marketing things they're going to get hit with. You know, what's some of those first veils maybe they can help them navigate through?
Well, the first thing is don't buy a cookie cutter diet. That's the thing. Everybody's like, oh, okay. Every motherfucker on Instagram, they lose 3 pounds and then their next post is, let me contact me for your diet help, $250 a month. Everybody's a contest coach or a diet coach because like all of a sudden they think they're magically qualified, or somebody's done a contest and they think they're a prep coach, or somebody's lost weight and they think they're a nutrition guru. Okay, that's great and all, but at the same time, with the best of intentions, you can be misleading people. The other one is when people, they have good intention, but then they get lazy, or they think one size fits all. Hey, contact me and pay somebody for a 6-week plan. It's a copy and paste of almost an exact diet they wrote for somebody else. Different people respond differently to different foods. They have different body types. They have different needs for carbs compared to fats. Some people respond to one better than the other at higher levels. You know, some people cut differently in terms of how many fats they can intake if they stay hard and dry while raising carbs and lowering fat. The thing is, just don't buy a cookie cutter diet. You know, you can use it as a framework to kind of get an idea of how to eat. Like, oh, okay. The biggest thing I talk about is nutrient timing. When I create diets for people, whether it be, you know, for a contest or if they just want to improve their physique a little bit or lose weight, the biggest part of that is nutrient timing. But the thing is that you don't use the diet that somebody else uses. You can't eat the diet that, say, Phil Heath eats. He has a different needs. He has a different body type. He's very genetically different, very gifted. You know, it's the average person, even if that same body weight eats that, they'll get fat as fuck. You know, it won't work different, same for him, you know. So with the best of intention, don't do a cookie cutter diet. Essentially, find that framework, manipulate it, and kind of experiment or get a coach that knows what they're doing that works with you individually and can work and get it customized for you. So that's the biggest first thing, is just, you know that you're different.
Dude, what you did was just protect everybody from buying one of those cookie cutter meal cut plans they sell you on TV at 4 a.m.
Yeah, and here's the thing, is typical people, they'll reinforce this by, you know, oh, I took it and I lost weight. Well, great, you're eating less fucking calories, but that doesn't mean that it was the best approach. It's like, okay, if you're eating a random diet and you're eating 3,000 calories a day, you go on a cut made for by meal plan that is 2,000 calories, you're eating 1,000 calories less, of course you're going to lose weight. You dropped your calories by 1,000 fucking calories. So, you know.
Aren't a lot of people getting away from the numbers to the calorie numbers and more just focusing on the activity versus the intake kind of thing? Not looking at
calories. Yeah. Yeah, they don't. Well, the numbers thing, you know, you do the point system or whatever like that. It's a handy tool that, like, it's better than not. Here's the thing. Let me, once again, both sides of understanding this, is it's better than nothing. In other words, like if you go from having no diet structure to having some diet structure, that's a step. But, you know, don't make it your whole reliance. It all does come down to your calorie intake versus your calorie expenditure. You know, if you're ingesting more calories than you're burning, you gain weight.
I'm kind of asking really direct on the kind of calories. I shouldn't say the numbers don't matter. It's the kind of numbers that matter, right? I didn't finish my thought there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing. There's people that are going to say, I don't even give a fuck. If it fits your macros, people, do you. That's whatever. you know, it's like the joke with that is, oh, have you seen the video about the guy that won the Miss Olympia talking about efficient macros? Oh, I haven't either because it doesn't exist. There's a rhyme and reason they don't do that kind of diet. It works for the general population, fine. It helps keep you sane. You can get some results, but an eliteness, then not so much. From a practical standpoint, you know, it's fine. It's a fine, but, you know, use it sensibly. But the point I'm making is calories are not just calories, you know. If you have 2,000 calories in your diet a day, and getting all of them from carbohydrates and a small amount from protein and the other from fats, you know, not going to respond the same to a high majority of from protein than I say like a small amount of fat and a decent amount of carbs. You know, everybody is wired differently. They respond differently to different levels. So, you know, experimenting within that. And then same deal even within calories. I would be hard-pressed. Here's like a very vague way of putting this. This is a very broad topic for this type of thing. Is okay, people say, oh, the source of the carbohydrates doesn't matter. Okay, please just look at me and tell me that 50 grams of sugar is going to have the same effect on your body as 50 grams of carbs from sweet potatoes. They're both carbs, right? Are you going to really argue that the 50 grams of sugar is going to have the same amount of effect as 50 grams of sweet potato? I know it's a good, like a broad example. Like, I'm not going to eat 50 grams of sugar. You know, so, okay, well, drink a juice that has 50 grams of sugar in it. Okay, you have liquid calories. So your body's going to metabolize it the same way, right? It's going to have the same long-term effect. Is that correct? You know, so it's using common sense for the most part in terms of that sometimes.
All right, I'm going to break in because we got about 10 minutes, you know, before we close this out. We'll be hitting 3 hours. I can't hit iTunes more than that. And, you know, estrogen, testosterone, hormones, where do these play into what products you're seeing develop now that are coming out of labs that you work in? How does that play into the body? How does estrogen play into everything versus testosterone, all of it?
Okay. In terms of supplements, you're really not going to see people dabble that much into that specific realm, especially the day that the pro hormones are gone, things like that. It's a very gray area. The biggest thing you'll see these days for companies is different types of testosterone boosters. In other words, there are supplements that occur naturally that work with your body to maximize its natural output of testosterone. Anything outside of that, exogenous forms, aka synthetic forms of testosterone, estrogen, so on and so forth, you know, they're obviously illegal. For supplements, they have to be prescribed by a doctor. So you're not going to see a whole bunch of that in terms of the supplement industry, aside from T boosters, maybe a anti-estrogen, possibly, things like that. But then again, you know, the effectiveness for a, once again, quote-unquote, naturally occurring product is going to be tough. So there is a upswing these days in hormone replacement therapy for ladies, you know, having your estrogen balanced out, for men having testosterone replacement. And people will go both ways with this, you know, saying it's safe or not safe. But, you know, for, say, a male perspective, too, you know, I highly encourage males in their older ages and when testosterone is declining, get their hormone levels checked. You know, they think, oh, they only think testosterone in terms of like, say, sex drive and muscle mass. But okay, think of it this way too. Low levels of testosterone can affect your heart health. Your heart is a muscle. You know, if it atrophies, if you're not having, you know, normal levels of testosterone, it's in theory, it could affect your heart. Once again, it's a very broad, far-reaching example, but you know, it's not as simple as, oh, high test equals, you know, just big muscle, high sex drive. There's other things people just don't consider.
Yeah. Now I heard someone say, actually, Europa, I had them on an interview and they basically said, if it comes to hormones or estrogen, testosterone of any kind, unless it's from a doctor, it doesn't work.
Yeah, essentially, you know, the chemical version is going to be the best one. There are a few ingredients out there like D-aspartic acid that have shown some promise for increasing natural test production. But, you know, other than that, typically your best route will be the pharmacology route, you know, done by something that's qualified, like an endocrinologist, to, you know, monitor your hormone levels, you know, keep it in your blood work, see where things at.
And I try to, you know, and the hormones run deeper too than just the basic three or four that people talk about. I mean, there's what, I think, what, 25, 30 something different variations. I can't really remember where I was getting the info, but when they expanded on the different types of hormones beyond just the basics, it gets a lot deeper than what you hear a lot about.
Yeah. You know, endocrinology is a whole nother amazing field of research, and it's once again definitely not one simple, especially for this time frame. But
yeah, Dr. Mark Gordon, bro, is where I send people to. He's a far-right expert on that. He's been using it to treat veterans coming home with PTSD. He's getting people unhooked off of opioids. I mean, Dr. Mark Gordon's research, and they're not even using the word hormone anymore. I think it's testosterone, something they've expanded on it. But his research, that's where I started. I actually mentioned him in the book too, The Cognitive Rampage, in the environmental, biological, scientific chapter. But man, he's where I point people for sure on that, man. So, I mean, I guess the question was basically verifying that if it's not from a doctor, for the most part, you're rolling dice.
Exactly. I agree with that. I mean, you know, like, oh, what's your favorite T booster? Oh, Chesty. You know, people are like, okay, smart ass. I'm like, well, you know, it's proven, it's real. It's a, you know, synthetic testosterone. It's going to work.
Yeah, well, a lot of, you know, steroids, testosterone, et cetera, all the things got a bad rap. You know, that's why I quote that Bigger, Stronger, Faster movie Chris Bell did, that documentary, because he walks into that era that I was kind of from, that Hulk Hogan era. That steroids, Lyle Alzado, you know, America, you know, he covered that whole myth. And he kind of points out that steroids aren't near as dangerous as they were sold to us as.
I agree with that. They're very overstated by a very misinformed and misunderstood subject, you know. I think the best point that he made in that is that the long-term effects of such anabolic substances are not known, and those studies won't be done because, one, of funding, and two, is because they're, quite frankly, a lot of people consider them unethical, you know. So when there's a potentially dangerous substance, potentially, once again, you know, it's just unknown. You know, people argue, oh, they, you know, can't be good for long-term health, so on and so forth. Then there's people saying, well, look at somebody like Arnold. He's old. He still looks great. He's been around forever. Then there's the same school camp, like all these big dead bodybuilders, guys dying in their 50s, 60s, things like that. There's a fucking tool in wherever he's from, Ziz, whatever his name was, the legend of Vay Aesthetics, the guy who looks like a 16-year-old girl or whatever the fuck he is.
Well, you see that, man. But then now his recent movie, Prescription Thugs, now brings to light a lot of these athletes that, you know, have used some things along those lines that have now been battling opiate addiction because of the pain from competing, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, when it comes to people having issues with anabolic substances, a big part of this is hilarious. Is everybody thinks they can control it in sports. This is going to touch his nerves, and it's just truth. Is the drug testing is probably 10 years beyond the drugs. Let's put it this way. Good example, Barry Bonds, back in the day when they busted in the Balco scandal. Somebody, they would never have figured out what he was taking. They never would have. Because the only reason they figured it out, somebody sent a fucking vial of the drug to the WADA, and they got it. They didn't know what the hell it was. They had to like go through, retest it, and figure out exactly what the substance was. It was undetectable at that time.
This Nowitzki guy, though, for the UFC, the guy that busted Armstrong, he's pretty on top of this stuff, though.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's people that argue all these guys got to be on something, or, you know, then there's ones, oh, you know, they know they're on something, but it's a league that, you know, thrives on bigger, faster, stronger, pun intended. They let it slide on the rug. Okay, but the funny thing
man, they've shut that shit down, man. They brought that dude in. Yeah, and what's true, you've seen a lot of performers go,
yeah, they decrease. Another really funny thing to me, at least, is if you haven't noticed, whether it be Matty Ramirez, Brian Cushing, numerous other athletes these days, when they've been busted and they get reported, they're never popped for any specific drug that they're taking. They're always caught or test positive for using HCG, human chronic gonadotropin, which is oftentimes, in after a steroid cycle, used for kick-starting testosterone production. So anytime you take synthetic testosterone, your body essentially gets the signal that it doesn't need to produce it anymore because it's an outside source. It can cause your body to shut down its natural production. Therefore, afterwards, you have to kick-start it. So a lot of guys, when they get busted, it's because they test positive for HCG. However, HCG can be used in men to increase sperm production for fertility purposes. You know, so it is legal to get for that reason. That's why it's more of a gray area where the suspension's light. Like, oh, I have a legitimate reason that I was using HCG. Or it could be that it's illegal just for that reason. You know, it's just a masking agent, you know, in terms of performance-enhancing drugs.
Wow, man. We could go deep down so many rabbit holes, as I'm sure we will in the future, man. You'll come back and do this again, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We got any, let's see, we have actually a few minutes because I got to do some opening, closing stuff. But is there something we didn't get to, man, that you thought we would? Something on the notepad in front of you? I call it podcast remorse.
You know what? The thing is, I know I'll be back. I'm sure I'll come across some good story here down the road that we'll talk about again. I think in terms of what we can cover in that short amount of time, off the top of my head, I think we nailed everything. We've gotten depth on quite a few things. It's been great. But I know we'll have more stuff prepared by the next time we get together.
Yeah, but, well, dude, no preparity on the TCR. We just freestyle. This now makes we are, I don't know, about 7 minutes from 3 hours because we did an hour and a half change yesterday, a little hour and a half change today. But iTunes only gives me 3 hours to post up on there, man. So thanks for doing this, dude. I got notes galore, man, and I'll probably be emailing you questions and definitely forwarding you all the fun emails that I get if I get.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Hey, so where can everybody find you, man, and hire you and get you to come in or do whatever? Where can they look you up?
You know, Instagram rules the world these days. You can check it out. It's Vanilla Gorilla Petey, P-E-T-E-Y. It's my IG. Or you can always hit me up with an email at abpetersjr@gmail.com. If you need to get in contact with me for anything like there, I'm sure I'll have some questions. If not, it's easy to filter out the bullshit, so go ahead. But, you know.
Yeah. Right. Any sponsors you want to give some love to, man, or shows you're hitting, anybody you want to shout out, that kind of stuff?
Essentially, you know, if y'all have another place to find me, any of the Europa shows will be at there. Of course, give a shout, mad shout out to the Cognitive Rampage, ESPN Radio. We've been doing some good work for there. So shout out to you guys for having me. And I feel this might bud into something potentially awesome down the road of getting this a regular thing. You know, we've had some good feedback so far. We've had some bad feedback so far, but, you know, fuck them. So,
yeah, well, it's still 70-30 good. So we got 70-30 winning. Until then, we stay on the air. So until that follows over about 50-50, we're done, man. But on May 29th, you'll be on ESPN Radio, where people can just download the ESPN app and search under live radio for it's ESPN 580 Orlando. Find that station under the app live. Once you download it, it's there forever. You just hit tap. Yeah, that's where they can listen. But if you're in Orlando, you can actually use the radio dial if you still use one of those. But that will be on Sunday, May 29th at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Baller. We've got some great stuff in that show. Hope people, you know, like what we have to say or not like we have to say. Either way, they're going to hear it.
I dig it, man. And we're going to drop part one and two of this podcast together, 9, 10, 1, whenever Steve gets to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my friend, thank you for having me. We'll be in touch. And everybody, thanks for listening to the Cognitive Rampage of Vanilla Gorilla PD and the one, the only, Adam Lowry. Hope I didn't steal your thunder.
I love it, dude, man. Love you. Later, man.
All right, bro. Have a good day.